officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed. And now our coalition is engaged in securing and reconstructing that country.
Super Digital Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
I'm not quite sure there's enough reverb on that. I think that the reverb setting on that is actually one called Gigantic Auditorium Empty. There's also Gigantic Auditorium Half Full and Gigantic Auditorium Packed. Also one called Grand Canyon. Yes, Scotty and Calvo. Why, hello. It's 2 minutes and 48 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of May in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. It is Tuesday, and welcome to day 12. Welcome to day 12. And I mean, what was that, 2003? When is that Bush got from? 2003? Welcome to day 12 and to the fourth year after the end of combat operations in Iraq. 4 years of glorious, blissful peace in that war-torn nation. There you go. Fantastic. Well done. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Why? Okay. I swear to God, we've been on the air about 40 seconds here, and people are already calling about that goddamn Chris Isaak song from yesterday. And I swear to you, Really? You think so, Scotty? Set to the screen. No. You will love this call. Really? What do I get to do to you if you're wrong? Where do I get to kick you? Actually, let me just put it this way. In your scrotum, how many times do I get to kick you if I don't love this call? Are you willing to put your, I guess you're not going to put that way your mouth is. Well, never mind. It's 503-733-2970. I swear to God, I almost opened my mouth and said that. Scott, are you willing to put your scrotum? And then you can join the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow. Okay. Best show ever. Tuesday, 503-733-2970 is the phone number. 503-733-2970. A guy sent me a link yesterday. I neglected to follow because I was busy talking about... We were busy dissecting whether or not Madonna's referencing bagels in the first line of La Isla Bonita. But a guy sent me this this webpage that will actually tell you what your phone number spells. Well, let's see, where is it? Well, I'll find it later.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I don't think our phone number spells anything. That's the thing. Let's see here. Do I have it? Is it here? I'll find it later. Guy sent me, but it's a page that you go there and you enter your phone number, and then it tells you exactly what it is your phone number spells out. Like, you know, Dennis says 1-800 blah 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 rant or whatever. I don't think ours spells anything, though. I think it just spells a lot of crap that can't be pronounced. It's like 503-733 or something. If you want to email today, you can do that as well. If you want to engage with us in a binary fashion, it's rick@rickemerson.com. 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 Or you can call us right out, 503-733-2970. I'm not really sure what you'd be calling us about right at this particular point in the program, unless it's about this Chris Isaak song. So we'll take that call in a second. We're not going to discuss misheard song lyrics today or ever again. You know, that was a one-time thing that we happened yesterday, and that's only because my brain was largely turned off. That's only because my cognitive faculties weren't really up to snuff. I wasn't really firing on not just all cylinders. I wasn't really firing on even a third of my cylinders yesterday. That time has passed, though. I am caffeinated and more or less wide awake, and so today's program is going to be... We're going to be back on track with our usual inanity today. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your complaints, your two cents, your what have you. Yes, with our high-octane hijinks. You really do talk like a salesperson. I swear to God, when this whole thing just goes belly up someday, Scotty, you've got a good future upstairs. They'll kick the rest of us out on the street to starve, but they'll take you right upstairs and they'll put you in an office right next to Mark Whalen.
It's Scotty, the new Matt Peterson.
He really... Start eating. I'm sorry. Was that out loud?
Man.
Bam. There you go. It's a fantastic day. I can already smell it coming. All right. What do we got? Well, let me just get this before we do anything else. Jim in the coup, for the love of sweet holy Christ, what are you calling about?
Hey, Rick, what's up, buddy?
Sir.
Chris Isaac, Wicked Game.
Uh-huh.
He both says, I don't want to fall in love with you, and I want to fall in love with you. He's torn. What a wicked thing you do. Nobody wants a wicked thing to make me dream of you. He both wants it and he doesn't want it.
Are you really calling about this or something?
I tried calling yesterday like 10 times, but your phones were all quested, so it didn't work out.
Hold on a second. Well, now we gotta listen. So you're saying, now, at what point in the song, are you saying within each chorus, he says both, I want to fall in love and I don't want to fall in love?
No. When he goes, hold on. I was about to sing it there.
Can you, okay, we're playing it here. What I call a high energy start to the program right here.
There you go, buddy. Right here, listen. He wants to fall in love. He wants to, right there.
Okay.
Maybe that one was a don't want to.
Your theory is falling to shards in front of you.
I think he does it twice. He does it twice, want to, and then when he follows it up, the next time he goes into that, I don't want to fall in love with you.
Are you sure you didn't dream this whole solution? All right, well, we'll give you one more time.
Hold on.
Should I try and scoot ahead?
Oh, no, why not? This is gripping. Why not just sit and listen to every second of this? All right.
I just like that I brought the...
It's almost there.
All right, here we go.
Well, not yet. Any second now.
Inglorious AM sound, no less. All right, here we go.
All right.
Here we go.
Don't again.
You don't know what the hell you're talking about, do you, Jim? All right, that's okay. We can be done with that song. All right. Now, here's the thing. I'm no closer to figuring out anything than I was like 90 seconds ago.
Jim is confused.
Jim.
He stopped talking.
Jim?
No, I didn't want to try and talk over the lyrics there. I hope I didn't bring the show to a grinding halt right out of the chute.
Well, that should have failed. I think your whole hypothesis has fallen into tatters, my friend.
But, okay, well, best show ever so far. Did you love the call?
I really did. It was a great call, though. Thank you, sir.
Later, buddy.
All right, there you go. It's Jim. He gets points for style, even though he didn't really help us figure anything out. And the best part was, at the beginning of that call, you could tell that he really did think he knew it. When he first came on, he's like, Rick, I've got it sussed. I've got it figured out. I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. And by about halfway through that first chorus, you could hear in his head his own theory just falling into little pieces. He was just... His own self-confidence was shattered. All right. Well, it's 503-733-2970. Here's the thing. We're going to quit caring about it now. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what's coming up later on today. CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini will be joining us from the Hill. We got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop in Los Angeles, because apparently there's... And I'm really unclear about what today is about. I thought... That May Day, which is today, right? Today's May Day? It's May 1st? All right. I thought that May Day was like a union thing. I thought that's what it was, like some Tom Joad holiday, where everybody was supposed to talk about the evil boss man and so forth. But now apparently it's become an immigration thing. Which is fine. It's very confusing. There's a lot of holidays. I don't even know what some holidays celebrate. Like, I swear to God, Arbor Day still shows up on my calendar, but I'm not even really sure what Arbor Day is.
I have no idea what Arbor Day is.
I have no idea what Arbor Day is, except that it allows me to say this. Arbor?
I barely knew her.
That's all I know about Arbor Day. And then we have this business that every year, and I bring this up every year, and don't feel the need to correct me on it, because it, clearly the fact that I've brought it up like 3 years in a row, and people have clarified it, and then I forget about it again, indicates that I don't really care about it. But I will make my gratuitous obligatory observation right now that I don't know the difference between Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and Armistice Day. I don't know whether they're all different names for the same day. I don't know whether they're different days. I don't know whether they're holidays that have been merged into one. To tell you the truth, I don't really care. Doesn't really matter. I'm assuming it all works itself out, and I take off work when I'm told to take off work. That's not true. I come here anyway, but you take off work when you're told to take off work. And, you know, and then banks are closed some days, and then they're not closed other days. And I assume that somebody somewhere understands how it all functions. And there's a whole lot of holidays that don't make any sense to me. I really don't understand what Boxing Day is either. Now, I'm not Canadian.
I was going to say Boxing Day, and I didn't want you to make fun of me. I have no clue what Boxing Day is.
And because
I lived in London for 6 months.
And I don't plan to... Now, I thought it was...
I think they have a Boxing Day in England, I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was just Canada.
They have a something day.
Or is that Bastille Day?
You are so dumb.
Hello there. Sarah went to college. You don't have any excuse. Well, in any event, please don't call about Bastille Day.
I do kind of want to know what Boxing Day is, and if there's one in London. Or England.
Would you like to know what my immediate explanation for Boxing Day is because I'm an idiot American? Boxing Day? Like, if you were to ask me right now what Boxing Day meant. In fact, rather than just getting my thoughts on it, before we do anything else.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say, except...
You're not going to amount to death, squad!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beamus up,
and then we'll find out what Tim Riley has cooking in the AM 970 newsroom.
I think you've given him too much time. I think he's probably had time to look it up.
Entering the studio now, our intrepid PA, Scotty J. Why, hello there.
Good morning.
Hi, Scotty. What's Boxing Day?
Oh, come on. You always ask me questions I don't know, and then you kick me out on my coattail.
If it makes you feel any better, we don't know what Boxing Day is either.
Well, we kind of wanted to see you venture a guess to see what Boxing Day is.
Because I want to know if it's more or less idiotic than my idea.
I'm going to think Boxing Day is a celebration of boxing as a sport. Either that or...
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that, or are you being the Scotty
Either
Gay?
That or change from tidy whiteys to boxing shorts on this day.
Are you attempting to be the Scotty J character now?
Because this
like
is reality, Rick.
You don't really think it's a celebration of the sport of boxing, do you?
Boxing Day? I mean, what? Make cardboard boxes? I mean, no, it's about...
To be fair, I can't come up with anything better. To be brutally honest about it, that's no worse than mine. Would you like to know what, in my head, when somebody says, you know, are you going to celebrate Boxing Day? Because doesn't Boxing Day come after Christmas? So in my head, Boxing Day... I'm not saying that I really believe this is the case, but in my head, the first thing that comes up, sort of like when Sarah hears La Isla Bonita by Madonna, and the first thing you hear is, last night I dreamt of some bagels. Like, you know that's not the case. But that is the first result you get that you then have to disregard and move on. When somebody asks me about Boxing Day, because I believe it's the day after Christmas, in my head, that is the day that you box up presents that you don't want and return them to the store.
No, I like that.
I'm not saying that's really what I think it is, because it's probably not. But in my head, Boxing Day is when you take items that have been given to you for Christmas, presents you don't want, like an electric nose warmer, and you put it back in the box, and you take it back to the store for credit or cash refund.
So you can pay the rent.
They wouldn't have an English or Canadian tradition based on bringing gifts back to stores for refunds.
Why not?
Because
they have traditions of dancing around a goddamn pole like you're a tree fairy.
Like boxing up all of your ornaments or like decorations.
Oh yeah, that's
that might be right.
That's a lot more.
Might
sense.
Might require a receipt. Isn't this like an old tradition? I don't know what you're talking
with
about.
With a receipt for carved onto pieces of wood.
Yes.
Isn't this the day that you're supposed to leave flowers on your mom's door?
Really? That's Mother's Day.
No, May Day. Flowers on the mom's door, right?
That's Mother's
Day.
And you
ring the doorbell and you run, kind of like others.
No, we used to do that when I was younger.
Yeah.
We had flowers on people's doorsteps. All right, I have the definition.
All right, well, don't tell it to me yet. Anyway, so...
You're wrong, by the way.
Really, you don't say. Coming up, we will also continue our hunt for the second worst story of all time. Courtney Love demands more of your attention. Pay attention to Courtney Love. Do it now. What else? Dennis Spitzenbarger graces us later on with his presence. Grace might not really be the right word. Top five coming up as well, and a big pile of crap that we got to get to, plus the many hairstyles of Mr. Phil Spector. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
It's the fourth anniversary of Mission Accomplished. At Oregon, a Iraqi war veteran has been ordered to go to a veterans hospital after weapons were found in his college dorm room and pipe bombs in his pickup. Spider-Man makes its premiere in the Big Apple. There are reports claiming the newest leader of Al-Qaeda has been killed in Iraq, whoever that might be. And a circus audience is horrified when a trapeze artist working without a net should have been as he falls to his death.
I'm sorry, I wasn't laughing at that. I was laughing at this email. I swear to God, just now, who fell to whose death?
A trapeze artist working without a net.
Oh, well, that is funny. I was laughing at this email about the Glorious Bastards. This guy says, hey, Rick, about the Glorious Bastards, was there a reason you went with Glorious Bastard instead of Magnificent Bastard? I always thought Magnificent Bastard was the saying. Maybe, I guess.
That's why you were laughing?
Well, no, because I was running through this conversation I had in my head yesterday with James, who was the board op during Lycus. This guy, James Robinson, who works in here, and he hangs out on the, you know, he runs the board during the Tom Lycus show. And he was talking about Glorious Bastard, and he was pointing out that in his opinion, not to be all about the wonder of me, but he was pointing out that what's funny about Glorious Bastard is glorious. That's what makes it work. Like, if you just said, like, become a bastard. Like, it doesn't, I guess that's funny, but it doesn't really have the same zing to it. And so we were running through, like, other alternate names that the Glorious Bastard, which is the AM970s, our listener group, that we could have used. And we were sort of cracking each other up by just going through, by sort of ad-libbing our own commercials out loud. Become an effing bastard. Become a greedy bastard. Become a scum-sucking bastard. And none of them really had the same zing as glorious. So there you go. Somebody has sent me this link that will tell you what your phone number spells, by the way. All right, we'll find that out here in just a skosh. All right, Scotty, final guess. What is Boxing Day? Are you sticking with the celebration of boxing?
I'm thinking it's change the tighty-whities out to boxing shorts.
Okay, first of all, you can never use that phrase again.
Okay.
And you know the phrase I'm talking about. You are not Dan Savage. Stop it. Don't talk that way. God, that's revolting. Why would you say that?
Okay, I take that back.
Is that Now I'm going with Sarah. Hold on. Now I have to ask. Is that what you wear? Do you wear boxers or the other?
Probably the other.
Really?
Sure.
You wear a little man panties?
But they're colored.
Man panties. But they're colored. Were they colored when you bought them?
No.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Bam.
So are they the short ones or are they like, longer?
Are they boxer briefs?
No.
They're just regular, like, Hanes jockeys?
They're just everyday, you know, normal guy, you know, under...
I don't know why I am made so... uneasy is not the word. I just find...
Why are you asking him? Why would you even ask him?
I guess what I'm saying is I find briefs...
Repulsing.
Not repulsive, but I do find them kind of off-putting in a way. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is.
Never mind.
What? Tell me. No, you gotta say it now.
I think you find, because it just seems like everything be just all mushed up in there.
Mushed up.
I think it's cleaner, personally.
Well, that doesn't even make any sense. Why would they be cleaner?
You know, some people don't wear undergarments, right?
Some people.
Right.
Some people don't wear those people. You people. Okay, so those people don't wear undergarments. And why are your briefs cleaner than boxers?
I don't know, because it just keeps stuff from hitting the jeans, I guess. I don't know.
Is that a problem you really have?
No, because I wear the undergarment.
These things keep brushing against my ankles. I mean, really, if that's an issue, I mean, either see a doctor or change careers.
All right.
Just stay here.
Right.
Hi, Sean, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
How's it going, Rick?
Well, I'm not really sure how to answer that question. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Hey, I had an idea for your Portland song there. I was thinking, I like the first words, and I was thinking, what kind of song should it be? A rock song, a punk song?
We're going for an Andrew WK-styled anthem.
Could it be Andrew WK / like Dropkick Murphys?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, that's what I mean. Or Dropkick Murphys, or like some of those Queen songs where, like, the, I hate to use We Will Rock You as an example, but you know what I mean. The big, loud soccer room, or not soccer room, locker room soccer field chants. You know what I mean? Dropkick Murphys are a good example of that, too. Like that, shipping up to Boston.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good example. But something that has, like, a lot of big gang vocals on the chorus and is very punchy and very powerful. So, yes.
Okay, well, I was going the other direction, so...
You were going the guy prancing through the field with a lute direction.
No, not really. My idea was there was an old Cream song called Anyone for Tennis.
Right.
And I thought, and the words actually fit perfect over it, so...
I think we're going for something big and really the definition of the word anthem. Really big and just loud and glorious and big and stupid and wonderful.
Awesome.
All right, thank you,
love
sir.
The show.
Thank you. We made a real brief announcement at the end of yesterday's program about this.
There's that word again.
Yeah. We'll do sort of a bigger announcement maybe later on in this hour. We have the first, it's actually more than the first line. It's actually the first four lines, the first sort of stanza for the Portland anthem. And I'm pretty, it is pretty great. I'm pretty happy with it. So we'll announce that later on. So now we got to move on to the second set of lines. So we'll do that here in just a few. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you?
Yes, this is Russ calling. You were asking about the Boxer Rebellion.
No, I really...
Boxing Day.
What is Boxing Day, sir?
Boxing Day has to do with the Boxer Rebellion, which I think had something to do back when England was in charge of India. And I think they put down a rebellion in India, so they have a big celebration every year to glorify that. It's
but what is... What is the boxer? Where does the word boxer come from?
Well, the boxer, I think it was something to do with the group of people in India that were revolting against the English rule.
Why would the English boxers. Celebrate a country revolting against them?
I don't know.
See, this is where your theory all falls into little tiny theory pieces.
But it is to do with the Boxer Rebellion, I know that.
You just don't know what the Boxer Rebellion was where it took place.
I'm pretty sure it was in India.
But see, that would be like the British celebrating the 4th of July.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, well, neither do we, so I guess it's a push. All right, thank you, Russ.
Thank you.
There you go.
All right, tell me to tell you what...
No, because it's... how about you tell me about the Boxing Day? I'll have you tell me in just a second. I'm just going to make this observation. It seems illogical for the British to celebrate the Indians overthrowing them.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Because, again, that would be like them celebrating the fact that we... that would like celebrating American independence. Can I just tell you this? I used to work with a guy who was British, and it was really weird to work with a British guy on the 4th of July. Because I really had to... This is where the jingoistic side of you comes out, the ugly American side. Working with a Brit, I really did have to fight off the urge to go up to him on the 4th of July and just be like, in your face! And just totally... I always wanted to go up and just spike the football a little bit. You know, 4th of July, yeah, bam! Brit boy! And I never did, but I always wanted to.
Okay, I've been reading a bunch of definitions. I finally found one that makes sense.
For Boxing Day?
Yeah.
Are they all different?
No, they all are around the same premise.
Are we really spending all this time talking about Boxing Day, which, by the way, isn't even today, which I think happens in December?
It's 7 months. It's the day after Christmas.
How did this start? Oh, because today is May Day. And so my question is, maybe this is a question better put to the news department of AM 970, Solid State Radio. So May Day is a celebration of what?
The Mayflower.
Is it like a, stop. Is it like a labor union day?
I guess at one time it was, yes, but there aren't any labor unions, well, with significant membership anymore, so it's every Tom, Dick, and Harry wants to protest anything today.
Every Starship and Moonbeam.
That's just a protest day?
I suppose so. Less than 1,000 people have turned out for the protest in L.A. so far, according to KFI.
I think it's just become a day for a bunch of rabble who don't want to pay for anything.
Was this the protest that Tim went out on the street last year for?
Yeah. Was this the illegal immigrant thing yesterday or last year? Hello.
This is my
sense of time and space. It's gonna be the best day ever. All right. Jesus God, it's like 25 after. Scotty, why are you here?
I have a surprise for you. I don't know if you want it now, later.
Is it a good surprise or a bad surprise?
You tell me.
If I have to read it before you tell me, it's sort of...
Read it out loud.
Element. Read it out loud.
All right, hold on.
In the blue, read it out loud.
Hey! This is a wonderful surprise. Listen to this. This from Scotty J. Scotty, I'm going to be nice to you today as well.
And forever on.
No, but today. This is from... I'll just say this. The Rick Emerson Show, in addition to interviewing Alice Cooper this coming Friday, will be pleased to welcome into the AM 970 studios on Friday, Allison Arngrim, TV's Nellie Olson.
Ooh.
Who will be here in the studio this coming Friday.
She'll be here?
At yes. 1 p.m.
Uh-oh.
In...
Well, I'll see
are you
a later.
Are you opposed?
No, it's something kind of related to that program that just came over.
That it's a bad program. And
something related to what program?
Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, God. Did someone die?
Did she die?
No.
Okay.
Now it's an anger.
She'll still
can't
be
die
here.
Until Saturday.
It is the Reverend
just died.
Oh.
Little house in the prairie. Isn't that strange?
No,
no, no, but now we can try to make her cry.
Something to talk about.
Now we can,
yeah, she can talk about it.
Now we can see if we can get her to weep.
He played the Reverend Robert Alden. It was Dabbs Greer.
Dabbs Greer. Totally one of... Me and Dabbs were down at Elaine's having
a... He was 90.
Well,
it was his time.
How exciting is that? Somebody
he ran the Walnut Grove Church from 1974 to 1983.
We should try to make Lisa Goddard cry with that information, too. Well, this... What an
Why do you want to make people cry?
What an exciting week this is. Dabbs is dead, and that gives us something to talk to Alison Arngrim about. So TV's Nellie Olson, Alison Arngrim, will be here in the studio this coming Friday at 1 p.m.
That is so crazy.
I never really thought that this was a phrase that I would be saying in my life, that I would be talking to TV's Nellie Olson.
Scotty J, you're awesome.
Scotty J, thank well you. Done. So
thanks
Alison
a lot.
Arngrim and Alice Cooper in one day. Anyone else? It's a 70s bonanza. Well, we found out Chuck Palahniuk sadly will not be happening. There is still a chance we'll be talking to George Carlin on Friday, though.
That would be cool. What a day.
It's all very exciting.
And I'm thinking if we come back this afternoon and maybe say hi to Mr. Palahniuk in the hallway, maybe we can
and then kidnap him
tomorrow.
And then shove him in the trunk of my car.
Okay, now you're just... That's crazy talk.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, hi, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
Hey, you want to know what Boxing Day is?
Yes, for the love of God.
England and Canada do not have an official Christmas holiday. Boxing Day is the day you open your presents.
Why don't they just have Christmas? Wouldn't it be easier?
Well, because they don't...
they don't believe in Jesus?
I guess.
Let's bomb them.
I have no...
Let's kill them all now.
Yeah.
Kill them and keep killing them until they believe in Jesus.
I just know that's what my grandfather told me, and he was from England. So.
Oh, your grandfather didn't believe in Jesus. What does he know?
Oh, yeah, that's true. He belonged to the Church of England, so. Christian, queen, and country.
Can't go down. All right, thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right.
Okay, so let me read this description. All right, so in England many years ago, it was common practice for the servants, because they had to take, they could never celebrate Christmas. Because they had to serve their masters. They were given the following day off, which is Boxing Day. Servants were kept away from their own families to work on a traditional religious holiday and not able to celebrate Christmas dinner. The customary benefit was to box up the leftover food and send it away to the servants
and
family.
So this is a day when they celebrate indentured servitude.
So this is the day when... When the poor of England got to celebrate Christmas because they were working for
that
the...
That seems like a holiday you wouldn't want to celebrate. That would be like celebrating, like, you know.
Yeah, I wish you never talked about this.
You just wish that
we're never going to know.
I don't even know what May Day is. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello, this is Bill.
Hi, Bill. How can I help you?
Well, I can tell you what Boxing Day is.
You realize that it's May, right? And
yeah.
The Boxing Day is in December.
It's the day after Christmas,
uh-huh.
And it's celebrated only in Canada, and it's when we bag up some gifts that we don't want or can't use, and we give them to the less fortunate.
This guy says that it's only in Canada. This guy
it is only in Canada.
Only in Canada is what this guy says, Sarah Dillon.
I really thought they had it in England.
No.
Sarah may be true about the history of it, but every country celebrates Christmas. Even the Muslim countries celebrate some of the Christmas.
Well,
so,
yeah, that's
but
right.
Sarah's definition is very close about how it probably did originate.
What a strange program this is. All right.
Canada has the official one. And also, Herschel is the lead guitarist for Chris Isaak. He just puts up the road for me here in Portland. He's going to be playing this summer at the zoo.
Chris Isaak or the guitarist?
Pardon?
Chris Isaak will be playing at the zoo?
Yeah, at the zoo concert.
Fantastic. We should totally try to interview Chris Isaak.
Yeah, right. Well, I can give you Herschel's number. You can give him a call if you want.
Herschel.
Herschel,
is he playing the band with a guy named Shecky? Yeah, seriously, if you want to drop me some contact info, that'd be fantastic.
Hey, put me off the air and I'll give you his number.
All right, thank you. Scotty, pleased to be talking to the guy on line 3 about Herschel, the guitar player for Chris Isaak. Man, we get Chris Isaak in the studio, we'll have soccer moms the world over listening to us.
I just asked him about Firewalk with Me over and over again.
Yeah, all without a rump-shaking television commercial.
Can we please break?
You know, have you seen that rump-shaking television commercial that Movin' 107.5 has? Where it's just a bunch of asses? Have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
When you shake your head on the radio, no one can hear it. Our sister station, Movin' 107.5, they have these TV commercials that are actually kind of interesting. But it's like a lot of today's urban hits or yesterday's urban hits or whatever. It's like Bust a Move by Young MC. And then it's just a bunch of butts gyrating in front of the camera. I was telling Susan, I think we got to do one. It's just a bunch of pelvises thrusting right at you. Like it's just AM 970. And then just like a guy's unit just going, right at the camera over and over again. I'm the only one who finds that funny. I haven't even had a chance to talk about this Wolfman Jack thing that I got today. The Wolfman Jack asking me to book Leon Russell for Danny and the Juniors for an upcoming station event.
That's not going to happen.
It's 503-733-2970. Do we have to break?
Yes.
All right. CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini around the corner. More of your phone calls, inexplicably. Probably more discussion on Boxing Day and or May Day. Later on, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. It's AM 970, Solid State Radio. Guy Fawkes Day.
Maybe I was confusing Boxing Day and Guy Fawkes Day.
Is the 5th of November or November or whatever the hell? November?
Yeah, because I remember when I was in London, I remember Guy Fawkes Day. Because there were fireworks.
That's the 5th of November, right?
Yeah.
That's the celebration of the day that Guy Fawkes
tried to blow up Parliament.
Tried to blow up Parliament. How sad that the only reason we know that is because it's from a Wachowski Brothers film. Hi. We're idiots. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 5-0. This is why we don't vote. Really, we ought not to be allowed to vote. We are the reason why poll quizzes were invented. 503-733-2970. Seeing the radio correspondent Bob Noodles Costantini joining us here in Escoche. Coming up later on, Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. In case you just joined us, on Friday's program, we will not only be speaking with rock and roll legend. Can I just tell you? I'm not going to say that I'm nervous as such. I'm just saying, though, that I'm thinking about the Alice Cooper interview probably more than I've ever pre-thought or pre-planned any interview I've ever done. Yesterday, I was walking along, talking out loud to myself, out loud, practicing and rehearsing my introductory speech.
So you're freaking out?
I'm not freaking out as
such. Well,
this
is something that your whole life has been building up to. This is a point in time. Must be a little nerve-wracking.
As Fatboy Roberts would say, don't try to throw me off my game. As Fatboy Roberts would say, as he said at Stakes on a Plane, my whole life has been leading toward this moment. We don't have time to talk about this right now, but each of us probably has a short list of people we want to meet or talk to before we die. Like, you've got Bob Dylan, and maybe, like, what, who else? Like, Morrissey or somebody? I don't know.
Maybe
Chuck Palahniuk. So that's today.
Do you think it's too nerdy if I come back?
Yeah, I love Chuck Palahniuk.
He's not going to know
you came back. How does he know you don't work here all day? He didn't even know who you are. I mean, no offense. I'm just saying he doesn't know.
No, but you said that you come up to him with me, right?
I said, is that just so you? Am I like your nerd deflection shield?
Yeah, I just want to shake the man's hand.
All right. Well, I'll get a photo with him. But you know,
my camera ran out of batteries, and I actually went to Safeway this morning and bought batteries for my camera just so I can maybe get a picture of him.
Here's the thing, though, and again, I don't dislike Chuck Palahniuk's work. I liked Fight Club, the book, much more than I liked the movie. Actually.
Yeah, I just reread Lullaby last night.
Lullaby is great. I loved Lullaby. Was great.
I liked it a lot better the second time around.
I really disliked Choke intensely. I really disliked that book. In fact, that book actually kind of put me off Chuck Palahniuk for a while because it was just so.
I haven't read that.
It was just so, like, vile, and I don't mean vile like it was dark and disturbing. I mean vile like it was sort of like, it was sort of like he, and again, I don't say this as a knock on the guy. He's a very talented writer in many ways. But I read Choke, and it was sort of like he was trying to just dredge his mind for, like, the most revolting images he could put on the page to sort of get people to talk about the book.
There were points in Survivor where I actually had to set down the book and walk away from it for a couple hours.
It reminded me of when I read American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis, and I'm sitting there going, okay, I don't. Why would you? I mean, there's no reason for this to exist. There's no reason except to try to get people to talk about the book and how revolting it is. So Choke really kind of put me off that guy for a while. Great concept. I kind of poorly executed. It had its moments. Choke certainly had its moments. Anyway, blah, 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 blah. So the reason I'm going to get my picture taken with Chuck Palahniuk today, and I know that we sound like idiots. I know that here's what we sound like.
Who knows if we're going to even be able to do that.
Well, and here's the other thing. I hate for us to sit and talk. I don't want for us to sit and just sound like, you know, hey, here's some cool stuff we get to do because we're on the radio. And aren't we cool to listen to how great our lives are? Because it's just a thing. You're on the radio. One of the perks of being on the radio is occasionally you get to meet people. You know, you get to meet TV's Nellie Olson. You get to meet people that maybe you wouldn't otherwise. But that my whole thing with getting my picture taken with Chuck Palahniuk today, if that happens, how shallow is this? Really, is it just so I can lord it over people I know who are big Chuck Palahniuk fans?
That's a horrible thing.
I know, but that's it. I would be lying I would be.
See, now you're cheapening the experience for me because he is one of my favorite writers ever.
Well, that's fine.
And I'm super excited about it.
That's totally great. It doesn't diminish the fact that you're a legitimate fan. And again, I am a fan of some of his work, but I'm getting the photo taken so that I can show it to people that are big Chuck Palahniuk fans and go like, in your face!
See, now you're jinxing us because you keep saying we're getting this photo taken. We don't even know if our paths are going to cross in the hallway. We're going to have to loiter down here like creepy little stalkers.
But it matters less to me, so... I'm saying I'm not trying to jinx it, because it doesn't, I mean, it's not like my life depends on it or something. I have nothing against him, but I'm not like the world's hugest Chuck Palahniuk fan. You know, but it, I've been on some MySpace profiles before where people, like, I've seen a couple of people who have their photo with Chuck Palahniuk, and the caption is like, the greatest moment of my life. You know, I meet the man who gave me, you know, gave my life meaning. Cause he's got,
I know some people like that.
Because you know Chuck Palahniuk is, and I don't mean to knock the guy, it's not his fault, but you know, he does attract the crazies. Chuck Palahniuk's books do attract, you know, like, I am an angry white guy looking for someone to blame, you know? Yeah, that's exactly who I'm thinking
yep.
of. You know what I'm talking about. And that's not a knock on him. Any artist of note tends to attract a certain amount of nutcases. And so... You know, Chuck Palahniuk is no different. He does attract some of the, bitter, crazed loner crowd. But I've seen MySpace profiles of people like it's a photograph of Chuck's his autograph on a book. And it's a whole lot of like, this is the greatest instant of my life when I stood a foot away from Chuck Palahniuk. So I'm totally going to get my photo taken with him just so I can sort of casually like, oh, yeah, that's
me. Well, I'm just curious to meet him because, you know, we both read his books and we know how intense and, you know, his writing is and whatnot. And I guess he's supposed to be the nicest mellow guy ever.
I heard he's a really mellow, laid-back guy. Oh, is this it? All right. Well, speaking of the furthest thing from mellow and laid-back, ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome... Emerson
Show, Political Firebrand, Bob Justin Eady.
I appreciate
the segue, Rich.
Hi there, Bob. How are you today?
Smooth. Very good.
It's what I do, my friend. How are things on this fine Tuesday?
Well, it's very busy here on Capitol Hill and in Washington as a whole. In about 15, 20 minutes, the Democrats are going to be sending President Bush this war funding bill that contains the timelines for U.S. troop withdrawal that would possibly start in this fall and would, U.S. combat forces would definitely be out of Iraq by, next March, by the end of next March. The bill that the president says he's going to veto.
Now, he's going to veto this, and then the veto will be sustained, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no conceivable way that Democrats, Republicans, or anybody are going to override this presidential veto. And we could have a veto vote, supposedly, or override vote, I should say, Thursday or Friday, I think, is what the time frame may be, and maybe one tomorrow.
All right, so here's a dumb question, Toby. If everybody, you, me, Democrats, Republicans, everybody knows the veto is going to be sustained, why are the Democrats doing this? And my question is, are they doing it because, A, they figure it's the best way to just sort of keep their efforts in the news? And I don't mean that in a crass way, but just to keep it in the public, you know, in the public view. Is it because they figure that every time they do this, they'll pick up a few more Republican votes and eventually it'll work? What is the point if they know it's going to fail?
If you do want to look at it in a crass way, you might look at it from the aspect that the Democrats are trying to play significantly to their base, which put them in the majority, although by a slim majority, and nowhere near enough a majority to consider seriously overriding a presidential veto of this bill. But the Democrats can go to their base and say, look, we are doing what we can. We are trying to put as much pressure on the president as we can to force some sort of withdrawal, or at least, you know, come up with some kind of guidelines, some kind of way of continuing to pressure the president to try to bring the troops home. That is what a lot of this really is about, because everyone understands how this is going to play out, initially at least. Now, what happens after tonight, and the president's going to be making a statement at about 3:10 your time, after he gets back to the White House, he's going to be making a statement, basically a veto statement on camera, that kind of thing. He's going to be making a statement, then then the negotiations start. And a lot of talk up here on Capitol Hill, we've been hearing from Republicans, is that there some might be some benchmarks acceptable to be put on the Iraqi government. That is one way of possible compromise, but it's anybody's guess really how it all play out.
Right? Is there any talk today about the fact that this is the fourth anniversary of Bush's mission accomplished speech, which seems spectacularly ill-advised and inaccurate in retrospect?
Well, there was a lot of talk about it on the Senate floor and the House floor this morning. That was the key theme among a lot of Democrats making speeches and playing to the C-SPAN cameras, if you will. Bob Menendez, a New Jersey Democrat, had a lot of choice words and said that the president's mission accomplished was delusional. That kind of thing. And continuing to attack the president with his rhetoric on the Senate floor. So a lot of Democrats did point to that. And perhaps there's no coincidence, really, that we're seeing a Democratic leadership get this bill to President Bush today, because as I even look at the televisions right now, I see one network carrying pictures of the president on the USS Abraham Lincoln from 4 years ago.
All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and we will have speaks with you in the immediate future. Ladies and gentlemen, fantastic. I love that guy. All right. 503-733.
That's one of the most hilarious things.
It's genius.
It really is.
It's only genius because of Bob.
It's so awkward.
No, it really is. It really is great. It never becomes old. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. What are these people calling about? Hello, Rick Emerson Show.
Well, hello?
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, I just heard a little burst of static, you know.
Hi.
Come on or something.
Yes, now when you get picked up, that's a thing that happened. When you get picked up on the air, there's like a little, hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Okay, well, I will never hesitate again and just launch it the next day I call you.
Okay.
I was calling about the whole Boxing Day, boxer this, that, the other thing.
Yes.
Basically, the unbelievable cornucopia of stupidity that was blasting from various sources on the radio.
That's what we do.
Actually, that's what many callers do, and I'd do if you wanted me to, but Sarah is correct that from the source she got that is the origin of Boxing Day, but the holiday changed and evolved over time. Now what happens is a lord and master of an estate, of if there are any left in England, gives a dinner to the servants of the estate and their families.
So, but does this happen in Britain and Canada both, or just Canada?
It would be Britain and Canada both, but it might be observed more in one country than the other.
That Canadian guy insisted that they only do it in Canada. He was very firm on that point.
He's wrong. The British Army observed
it. Yeah.
The British Army observed it by having the officers give the enlisted men a meal, which caused me to think, since Prince Harry is going to deploy soon, supposedly, if they hang around there long enough for a Boxing Day, some British sergeant could be getting his table bussed by an heir to the throne.
So this would be like if I had to serve, if I had to give Scotty food all day.
Well, that makes a terrible mental picture, Rick.
Yes.
But that would, well, not all day. It's just, it used to be, but now it's just a meal, and it's sort of a celebration thing.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. There you go. Rick Emerson Show, are you calling about Boxing Day?
He's kind of right. He's mostly right. So I'll pass on that one. But on May Day, there's various, the Druid religion had some kind of May Day celebration, but the modern version, it was started by the communist revolution in Russia, and they designated May 1st as May Day, as Workers' Rights Day.
So
that's why it's all muddled up. Of course, there's no hardly any more communist countries anymore, so subsequently the May Day celebrations are taking on all these.
It's just become a bunch of gibberish. Countries. Now it's like everything, and I'm looking, it's not just here, it's all across the country. Now it's like in Portland, where it's everybody who's got an axe to grind about anything, anywhere, ever.
I don't think it'll be a very big parade today, but there'll be some people out there. What they should be protesting is where they're going to get their next job at.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, I just wanted to clarify the Boxing Day thing.
Yes.
But first off, I wanted to say, too, about Bob Constantini.
Yeah.
I didn't think that guy could be any more monotonous, but when you listen to him on your phone, it's just like a whole other level. I think I just tuned him out for the entire time. Anyway, Boxing Day.
When you're sitting there on hold and Bob's going,
And Rick, as you know, the quorum rules.
For a while there, I was on hold. It's like, what's going on? Who am I talking to on the phone? Anyway, so the Boxing Day thing, Sarah's actually the one who's right. I think everybody else is partly right, but mostly wrong. It comes from the British holiday, the day after Christmas. They used to do, like she said, the food, and they'd box up household items, like soap and towels, and I guess more or less the things that the rich kids didn't want, so they'd pass them off to their little serfs.
So it's so it's re-gifting day.
Yeah, totally, exactly, and useful things for the servants the day after Christmas, so they box them up the boxes.
Excellent.
But it is celebrated in Canada and the UK, and the one other one everyone's forgotten about is Australia.
All right,
so, and it's a pretty big holiday there because they get all four, like Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off. So,
are you excited that we're going to be interviewing TV's Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie this Friday, sir?
Yeah, seriously, man. That was one of my favorite shows as a kid. I love that show, absolutely.
See?
So,
that's what I'm talking about. Across all cultures that cuts.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So that's the word on Boxing Day. All right, later.
Thank you. There you go. And he's taking himself out there. Good times. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Okay, and we're done with that. Never call about that again. Ever, ever, ever. Let's see. What do we got here? Rick, did you know the Choke is being made into a film? And then let's see, there's a link to some article. Hope you like Chuck Palahniuk. He is a really nice guy. Well, he's one of those guys that would have to be nice. His writing is just so crazed that you figure he couldn't just function like that. Like, he couldn't actually just be like that because he just would have... He would have found him dead in a puddle of his own spew somewhere by now. He can't be... I mean, guys who write like that are typically really mellow in real life, and then it just all comes out on the printed page. Rick, if you're going to have a thrusting pelvises ad, we're not. It was just an idea. You should change the station's tagline to Full Frontal Radio. I think there was a radio station in Utah.
Full Frontal Radio.
Full Frontal Radio. I think there was a radio station in Utah that got into a little trouble because they called themselves Full Frontal Radio. What else do we have here? Blah, blah, blah. Links to Boxing Day. No, we're done. We're done with that. It's 503-733-2970. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner at the Ministry of Truth with the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, we have CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop, the top five, and more. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Why are you still talking about Scotty J. Bunker?
I'm not. And I wasn't just now. No one heard. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Top five. We will sort of re-unveil the opening line to the Portland Anthem. We continue our search for the second worst story in the history of the world. Ladies and gentlemen, the real reason you are here today, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Some people are hoping that these marches don't turn into anything big today. Less than 1,000 have attended the march in L.A., that according to KFI. And last year was like hundreds of thousands, so apparently there's no interest in that.
Well, because last year it was like an illegal alien thing, right?
Right.
It was. I think. I mean, maybe I'm misrepresenting. Maybe I'm misrepresenting.
No, it was National Illegal Alien Day.
But I think this year it's just
we're used to them being here.
We're just sort of zen.
We're not celebrating them. We're used to them.
It's National Shrug and Accept It With Apathy Day.
Right.
Fantastic.
So apparently, you know, they'll do the same thing. They'll get in the way of the MAX track. So if you're taking MAX, get home early today. Because festivities here start around 4, but then they don't get going until 5 because that's when people get out of work downtown.
All in their attempt to thwart the man, who is not downtown, by the way.
The man is in the suburbs now. That big white man, he's in the suburbs. He hasn't been downtown a long time. The only thing downtown is scraggly-looking people hanging around the bank waiting for you to come out. I witnessed that myself this morning.
Are you Jim Riley?
Is that
Do you have any money? No. I just made a deposit to the bank. I don't carry money on me. Go elsewhere. I can't wait for that mark of the beast on my hand. So when they say, like, do you have any change? I can just hold up the barcode on my palm and say, no, I do not. I am inscribed to the mark of the beast. That is the way I obtain goods and services, sir. The worst part is when there's a homeless guy camped out. Like, when a homeless guy asks you for change, do you... How would you answer this question, Tim? You're walking along the street. I am a scraggly homeless man. I say, do you have any change? What do you say?
I wouldn't let it happen because I'd have my iPod earbuds in.
Oh, I see. So you just don't acknowledge.
Right.
Okay.
Or if I don't, I quickly pull out my cell phone.
you just pretend that you're... So sell 300 shares of... Yeah, okay. Because I, for some reason... Do you ever... Well, I guess not, but I have this weird guilt where I don't like to lie to the homeless person.
Right.
And it's always like I'll be at a bagel place. So I walk into the bagelry, and like I come out, and sometimes I swear to God, maybe I'm projecting, but sometimes I swear to Christ, I can hear the change jingling in my pockets.
Oh.
As the guy says, do you have any change? And I say, no, as I walk around, and I swear to God, you can hear like $3 worth of quarters and dimes in my pocket.
See, as a habit, I don't carry cash. Because I do all my bookkeeping on Quicken, and I account for every dime that way.
I think if only I were so fastidious, I wouldn't have these problems. All right, or if I just never left the house at all.
I really got to ramp that up. All right, here's time. You know, as far as the homeless go downtown, there's this church down here that's handing out food all the time. There's a long line. And most homeless people, if you don't ask another homeless person, they'll tell you that the churches feed tons of people down here every day.
Yeah, and then there's that mission on whatever, on Burnside.
Yeah, so there's no excuse for a homeless person to go hungry here in the PDX.
Yeah, in your face, homeless people.
So don't ask me for a dime. There's plenty of good food at these churches.
Yeah, get off my back.
Yeah.
All right.
So here it is. It's May Day. It means nothing here in the United States because apparently, well, people thought you were a communist if you celebrated it way back when. But we had riots here in the past, but we haven't in the past few years, so that's a good thing. Meanwhile, over to Iraq, where at least 104 U.S. soldiers have died during the month of April. This is the deadliest six-month period for U.S. forces since the war began more than 4 years ago. So the president's going to go on TV tonight. This is the fourth anniversary of Mission Accomplished. And he's going to veto this bill that Congress sent him. He said, if we withdraw U.S. troops in Iraq, there will be a quadrant of chaos. Like there's orderliness going on here now.
Yeah.
So he's going to be on TV, let's see, around 3:10 our time, 6:10 p.m., when everyone's commuting anyway on the East Coast.
And I know nobody's going to listen. Nobody's going to pay attention. Everybody's made up their mind about it one way or the other. And I don't know what the longest war in American history, the longest military action, probably, I mean, maybe Vietnam. But I don't really know the answer to that. Yeah, it seems like it has to be Vietnam. But I do know that this has got to have been longer than World War II by now. And I'm pretty sure it's longer than World War I.
Yeah.
So... I mean, it doesn't really seem to be paying any dividends, but what do I know? All right.
So, Congressman John Murther tells the Today Show that if the bill is vetoed, and it will, there will be a response.
What we're going to come up with is a plan to fund the war if he vetoes it. If he read the bill, I don't think he'd veto it. We put the requirements in for the troops, which the military has set. We put requirements in for the Iraqis, which he and the Iraqis agreed to. We put benchmarks and timelines to give the Iraqis the incentive.
Well, apparently he's not going to read it anyway.
No.
So then what do we do?
We can't solve it militarily. It can only be done with international diplomatic relations. And we haven't done that. We haven't put a full court press on the diplomatic side. That's the big problem we face.
Well, that's not true either. The idea that we can solve things with diplomacy, really, that's not going to be...
Where are their diplomats located?
Underground.
Is there a sign that says diplomats here?
In coffins.
In one of those bombed out buildings?
There's no diplomat.
There is no government.
No, that's the thing. Is we really just need to give in to apathy and nihilism over there. We just need to understand that it's never going to work. Did you see the other day that we're actually starting to build walls around around sections of Iraq?
Right.
That we're starting to build these huge Berlin Wall type things there because that worked so well in the actual Berlin. Mm-hmm. So anyway, no, democracy doesn't work. Military action doesn't work. Nothing's going to work until we just put a gigantic 500-foot wall around an entire section of the world and just ignore it. You know what I mean? And check back every now and again to see if it's all just kind of sorted itself out. Because nothing we do is going to help, and everybody just needs to embrace that. Everybody needs to embrace that attitude. Mm-hmm.
Well, there are reports coming out of Iraq today that the leader of Al-Qaeda, whoever he is this week, is dead. So that's supposed to be some sort of good news. Yeah, we don't know.
I thought Osama bin Laden was the leader of Al-Qaeda.
No. We're talking about those people in that deck of cards that nobody talks about anymore.
That's right. I don't even remember who was who. Was Osama bin Laden the ace of spades?
I don't remember, but this is the successor to Abu Musakawi, and this guy is Abu Ayyub al-Zubayr. And he replaced Zakawi as the head of Al-Qaeda, apparently after some election or something, after the other guy was killed. How we come up with these stories and expect people to believe them? We just make up names and we give people titles. We have no idea if they even exist.
And you really know.
If we read it enough times, people think it's a story.
And now that you mention this, I really have no idea how.
The deadline on this is undated. From whom? Who wrote this and where did it come from? Millions of people are reading this right now, and people are following like sheep. This undated story that we don't know where it came from, who made it up.
It's completely
What facts that there is are related to this?
It's completely unsourced information about the war.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do point out an interesting, this is really an interesting idea. I hadn't really thought about this. How do the Al-Qaeda folks decide who's going to, it's not like they don't get together in a room and burn palm leaves or whatever the hell it is the Catholics do.
Yeah.
I don't really even understand how that works. Is there like a mass memo that goes out? Is it something they tack over the Al-Qaeda water cooler next to the no sexual harassment in the workplace thing? So, all right.
So this undated unsourced story tells us that there's a new leader of Al-Qaeda. All right, we'll believe it.
Follow it unthinkingly. Do as you're told.
All right. Meanwhile, George Tenet went on Larry King because everybody else does, and he defended himself from the accusations of former officials.
And the notion that I didn't look at my job as a sacred responsibility to protect those soldiers, to warn them, to make sure that when they were put in harm's way, we didn't give them the best intelligence, well, I just can't agree with that.
He's full of bunk anyway.
He's full of bupkis is what he is. And haven't we killed either the number one or the number two leader of Al-Qaeda like 1,000 times?
Yes, we have.
I mean, is this like an earthworm?
And we haven't put out any new decks of cards with pictures. So how are we supposed to know who these people are?
No idea.
We can use the other ones. Just change the names on him. He said he stood up for what was right when he was leading the CIA, as right as the CIA can be, I guess.
When we got on the ground in Iraq, when we understood how badly a post-war plan would be implemented, we spoke truth to power.
Yes, he did his very best.
We always did our best to tell people what we thought, why we thought, and made it as clear as possible. We were wrong on weapons of mass destruction. We were not wrong on what happened in the post-war Iraq environment.
Yeah, that made everything very clear.
Yeah, really, the idea that the CIA is doing their absolute best, the notion that that might actually be true just scares the living hell out of me. The idea that the American government really is doing the best they absolutely can over there. So, hey, Jeff McGinley, if you're listening, line one, which is not working at all yesterday, now appears to be working, but it drops the calls a lot. People who are on hold on line one, they're only on hold for, I keep trying to go to this call, and then it drops them. So just if you're out there listening, line one rings and holds, but they won't stay on hold. So just if you're out there. All right, it's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, it's been less than a month since Don Imus was fired for making racist remarks on the air. And now Rush Limbaugh finds himself in the middle of his own racial quagmire. The talk show host has been playing a song about Illinois Senator Barack Obama on his radio program called Barack the Magic Negro.
Oh, Barack the Magic Negro lives in D.C. Anytime they call him that, cause he's black but not authentically.
Because he's black without what?
But not authentically.
What, it's like painted on? What? I don't understand what that means.
Can we hear that again?
Certainly.
So this is for the Rush Limbaugh program, by the way.
Oh, Barack the Magic Negro lives in D.C. Think any time they call him that, cause he's black but not authentically.
I don't even understand what that means.
The New York Times calls him a...
Well, I think that is actually, to be fair, I think that phrase actually does come from an editorial that was in the newspaper, that was in the New York Times called...
It was a Sunday editorial.
Yeah, Barack the Magic Negro.
Mm-hmm.
I am... And what a strange phrase. Who ever thought that we would be using that phrase on the air, much less in reference to the New York Times? I'm really unclear about what his magical abilities are. Can he fly? I don't understand exactly what is it about him that makes him magical.
Does it say? Well, we'll go on here. See if it says anything else.
All right.
The parody lists some real black men who talk the talk.
See real black men like Snoop Dogg or
I'm losing the last part.
Come in late and won.
Oh, I see. Is that being sung from the perspective of someone?
I believe so. Here's a verse from the parody explaining why the media and white people like Barack Obama.
I'm saying Barack's articulate and black and no AP. The media sure love this guy like interlopers.
It's coming to us off a wax cylinder.
So earlier this year,
Watson, come here. I want you.
It's a Hafrican.
What? A Hafrican.
Claiming the junior senator was neither black enough nor white enough.
Well, because I do believe that one of his parents is what
yes,
what people would call Caucasian. Mm. But I'm unclear about that. Well, that darn Rush. That's just, you know what that is right there. I will absolutely get, because Rush knows. Here's the thing about that. All of that print that Imus got. And then, you know, and then his show just got the boot. Rush knows that there is no way that they would ever kick him off the air. Rush's program would never, ever, ever be taken off the air because that guy is still too big of a player, too big of a power broker, makes too much money. And I know I said all this stuff about Imus, but you know what? It is true to like the nth degree for Rush. So I will guarantee you that this is Rush attempting to garner all of the media attention that Imus got. And I will tell you, here's the other thing about it, is that Rush. He's not nearly as good as he used to be. He really has fallen off of his game. Rush, I mean, just in terms of pure, entertainment value and in terms of pure talk radio talent, there was a point like in around 91, 92, 93 when he was probably the best that had ever been behind a microphone, in my opinion. But you want to talk about a guy who knows how to so carefully thread that needle and to do things that just sound awful, but that don't actually contain anything you can point to as being racist or offensive. He is a guy who knows, he's like Michael Moore in that way. He's a guy that knows how to juxtapose sounds and words and images and ideas and thoughts and specific kinds of dialogue that really come off as a slap in the face for reasons that you can't quite identify. And I remember, who was it? Was it Donna Shalala? There was at some point a prominent black female politician at one point in the early 90s, and I forget exactly who it was. And I don't want to just start listing off like every black female politician I can think of. It's pointless. Doesn't matter who it was. There was some prominent black female politician, and Rush made her unofficial theme song. It was like the Jeffersons theme. And so every time he would say, now it's time for a, you know, he would do some sort of, you know, he would, now it's time for an update on Maxine Waters or whatever it was. And then he would play the Jeffersons theme song, which seemed hideously offensive, but for reasons you couldn't really ever quantify why it was. It just seemed awful. It just seemed like a terrible thing to do, but there was really no way in which you could explain it. And that's, you know, that's the thing that guy sort of, he really perfected that art in the early 90s. And this is clearly several steps beyond that. But he's obviously trying to get all of that attention that they focused on Imus last week, knowing at the same point that he's safe from being fired because he just makes too goddamn much money for that company. So, all right.
Spider-Man 3 has made its U.S. debut after screenings at seven other stops around the world. It premiered last night in Peter Parker's hometown of New York City in the borough of Queens. Spider-Man 3 star Topher Grace says the last couple of weeks have been a whirlwind of activities.
I've been to, like, Japan and Russia. I've never been to either of those countries. And London, which I have been to, and Paris. It's been a hard day. I'm, like, running. Everyone's chasing me. It's crazy.
Don't sing anymore.
Bill Paxton's dad, John, who plays the butler in Spider-Man 3, said he was thrilled that the premiere was held in Queens.
I love it. See all these wonderful people and being in this wonderful borough of New York. I think it's a great idea.
He sounds like that. Like he sounds like Max Giesger talking about Woodstock.
Spider-Man 3 star Thomas Hayden Church, who plays the new victim, Sandman, said he loved filming the movie in New York City.
It was terrific. I really enjoyed it. It was the first time I'd ever shot anything in New York, so it was a big thing.
Dylan Baker says he's delighted to be at the premiere.
This is my first one, actually. I haven't even seen the film yet, so I'm excited about seeing it tonight. I'll be like, you know, just like another audience member seeing it for the first time.
The reviews on that are really mixed. It's, people are really having to bend over backwards to find anything good to say about this movie, because it's coming off the heels of Part 2, which was fantastic.
Yes,
really, one of the best superhero films ever made, but the word is that the third one is kind of bloated and unlikable.
Same thing happened in the Superman series way back when.
It's true. It's exactly it, where it sort of peaks, and then in Godfather 3, same thing. Back to the Future, same thing. Karate Kid, same thing. Where, you know, you can occasionally best the original with a sequel, but then the third one is always a massive implosion. See also Star Wars. They're saying that this is the Jedi of the Spider-Man franchise. Let's get, hi, Jim. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, Jim.
Hey, buddy, I got a contribution to the Portland song.
Oh, yeah, we haven't unveiled really officially the actual opening, but what is your contribution, sir?
Well, I'm thinking like a chant, and it kind of ties into what you were saying earlier about all the homeless people in Portland.
Yes.
Just like a mass of voices yelling out.
The homeless to sing on the song.
You got any change? You got any change? You got any change? You got any change? And then come in with the screaming guitar lick.
All right, I'll make a note of it. Homeless asking for change. All right, thank you.
Later.
That does have a particular Portland vibe to it. You're right. Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Greetings from the Ministry of Mediocrity.
Hello, sir.
Hey, that was funny. In 79, I was over in Saudi Arabia visiting my folks during the holiday season. And a curious thing happened. The Shiites and the Sunnis were attacking each other, and they closed down the country. So on December 26, 1979, which is Boxer Day, by the way,
right?
I went with some acquaintances that work for British Aerospace, and we went to a soccer game between two towns there.
Isn't going to a soccer game there just taking your life in your hands? Isn't that like 100 times more violent than it is in Portugal? Like, doesn't the losing team get taken out back and eviscerated and then eaten by goats or something?
No, that's Mexico City.
All right.
But seriously, you're close, because during the halftime festivities, they bring out the local miscreants and apply Sharia law in public.
Just a lot of beatings and beheadings.
And then you one beheading, gun. Two guys lost their hands, and a woman got stoned to death, and they machined somebody else.
They are
machine gunned somebody else.
They are our partners in peace, sir.
Well, I'll tell you, I spent 3 more months and a day there longer than I was supposed to. And it's a scary place. It really is.
No, that's
it still is.
When somebody asked Harry Brown what he would do when he was elected president, he said his first thing was to abolish the IRS and the CIA. You elect me president, my first act is just to get rid of Saudi Arabia. Just to remove them altogether. Just to remove them from the equation.
Well, somebody had a great idea. It was building a 500-foot wall around that whole region.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, and then fill it with water.
All right, there you go. That's Jeff. All right, this is a diplomacy, the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
The owner of a Mexican restaurant in Brigham City, Utah, is offering 500 tacos for information that leads to the arrest of the person who stole about $3,000. Somebody broke into the glass door restaurant and stole cash and checks that were being prepared for deposit. The price of tacos is more than $2 in Utah. The reward is about $1,200. Meanwhile, because you asked, a potential Friends reunion is less likely and less likely. Although the stars of the hit NBC comedy, including Courtney Cox-Arquette and Jennifer Aniston, have expressed interest in doing such a thing, Matthew Perry takes a much less enthusiastic response.
I really have no thoughts on that. I don't think that will ever happen, but if it were to, you know, it'd be lovely.
That show's only been off the air like 2 years.
But that's
it?
Matthew Perry?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like him.
He's been to rehab.
Can we play that again?
Yeah.
This is Matthew.
I really have no thoughts on that.
No, that's Matthew Perry.
I don't think that will ever happen, but if it were to, you know, it'd be lovely.
Yeah, especially the beginning, it sounds like him. But he's not doing anything now because, by the way, people who are fans of Studio 60, what they are going to be doing is NBC is running this really disingenuous ad campaign about this. Studio 60 returns to NBC. And what they're not telling you is they're returning it right after Sweeps is over just to burn off the remainder of the episodes that they're contractually obligated to air, and then that show's never coming back again, ever, ever, ever. So if you're a fan of Studio 60, I guess you can catch the remaining episodes once Sweeps Week is done, and then you can just wait and buy the entire series on DVD for like $9, because it's going to be like 2 discs, because that's it. So Matthew Perry's clearly not going to be doing a whole lot of anything, but Who else can think? Courtney Cox is doing that dirt show on FX, but nobody's really paying attention to that. Jennifer Aniston's got she's got the most successful career of all of those guys, because David Schwimmer's doing anything. What was David Schwimmer even, has he even done anything since he's showing off the air?
Not to my knowledge.
And then what's his name, Matt LeBlanc did Joey, but that imploded after like a day.
Mm.
So, you know, but that's, the problem with these shows is that there's always one person who is wildly successful, and that person is the reason why the reunion doesn't happen, or they have to reunite with somebody else in their place. I mean, that's like the Justin Timberlake syndrome. That's why there's not going to be an NSYNC reunion anytime in the next 15 years, because Justin Timberlake is too successful. Reason there was never an Eagles reunion for the longest time, because Glenn Frey was all ready for it to happen, but Don Henley was off making. Glenn Frey's just sitting there doing the ads for Gold's Gym or whatever the hell that was, and singing "The Heat Is On." Don Henley actually had a successful solo career, which is why he was never interested. First time Don Henley had a solo record that bombed. The first time he put something out that people didn't buy. See, also Paul Simon. Paul Simon put out that hideous record about 4 years ago. Completely tanked. And he was on the phone like that day to Art Garfunkel going, "Hey, do you want to get together and go?" So it's going to take Jennifer Aniston's movie career imploding before they'll do a Friends reunion. And by the way, people can't miss you if you're never gone. That show, it seems like it just went off the air last year. So you got to be gone a little while longer for anybody cares about you.
Meanwhile, Rosie O'Donnell already has offers from NBC and CBS. So she says. Not only that, Rosie can pretty much write her own ticket, whether it's a no-holds-barred show for HBO or a syndicated program similar to her previous hit talk show. What's clear, though, is that O'Donnell is leaving a leaking, if not sinking, ship at The View. And don't ask about rumors that Roseanne Barr will succeed her at the desk next fall. And if you thought Barbara Walters had trouble tolerating O'Donnell, believe me, says this gossip columnist, a few weeks of Roseanne will send her over the edge.
Well, because Rosie O'Donnell is sort of crazy and confrontational, whereas Roseanne Barr's just nuts. I think she really is just flat out insane and unstable. If they were really smart, you know what they do is they would give Rosie O'Donnell, I say as though I'm a Hollywood power broker, they would give Rosie O'Donnell a cable or like a Showtime or HBO version of that daytime TV show she did, but just do it like a once a week thing, like sort of like a Bill Maher, like a Real Time with Bill Maher, but with Rosie O'Donnell, where she could just be as shriekingly profane as she wants to be. That might be a thing that people would watch. I mean, you know, she's the only attention that show's gotten for the last year, so she can pretty much do whatever she wants, I think, at this point.
Meanwhile, a circus trapeze artist working without a net should have been. He fell 40 feet to his death before a startled audience. Roberto Venezuela, Texas, fell headfirst and died. He was performing at the Circo Humanes Vasquez. That's the Vasquez Brothers Circus. They traveled from Mexico for the show at the Whittier Narrows Recreational Area. County firefighters happened to be at the show to monitor the act, which involved fire. Firefighters tried to help Venezuela, but he died at the scene.
Is this like another one of those like those circuses that we had that story about last month where it's like it was 3 cents or something to get in?
And it was collapses on the patrons, all of which who were allowed to smoke inside. It is the radio station's biggest promotion of the year.
Where the tent is just made out of like hundreds of pairs of old pants, mm-hmm, that they found somewhere, all stitched together and held up with a broom.
Three-legged elephants and chickens without feathers.
Totally.
One of those circuses.
Well, we can't afford a net, but the show must go on. I don't think I've ever seen, you know, you hear that phrase, doing it without a net. I don't think I've ever really been to a circus that operated without a net. I didn't really think that actually happened. I mean, I sort of thought you were required to have a net. Doing it without a net is sort of like having, you know, that would be like we're going to be in the studio with no fire extinguisher.
Mm.
All right. Rick, David Schwimmer made an HBO movie called Breast Men. That is true, and it was really good. It sounds like it would be terrible. About an L.A. plastic surgeon. Breast Men, which is a sort of one of those made-for-HBO sort of really sort of dramatization documentaries, and it was about the guy who created and perfected the breast implant in America. That is right. It's not a bad movie at all, actually. It's if you can get past the hideous title, it's actually not too bad. But I think after that he did a whole lot of nothing. Rick, about that taco reward, how is it possible that someone who can eat 500 tacos will be physically able to catch a thief? I can't imagine the taco reward is a good idea unless the thief is a big bag of Cheetos. That's Mike. All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
A Portland woman is suing the cops for violating her rights after two officers allegedly arrested her at home when she was half-naked and refused to let her get dressed. They were called to Sherry Spandau's home after she woke up early one July morning and started pounding her fists on the windows. She was suffering from a concussion and was disoriented. When police arrived, they arrested her for disorderly conduct. She was only wearing a tank top at the time and asked officers for a moment if she could get dressed. But they wouldn't let her put her clothes on.
What part of Portland was this in?
Let's see here. I'm looking for an address here.
So we can go by and leer.
It doesn't say.
All right. Well, it was probably in some unpleasant section of town.
So she was hauled up to jail wearing only a tank top, which she had worn to bed, but wasn't wearing anything on the bottom half of her body.
Imagine sitting on that squad car seat with no pants on. Just go soak the bottom half of your body and lie. All right. Scotty has a valid point. Who really wants to give their life to the circus? I mean, really, when you think about it, think about that poor bastard who's falling off that trapeze and is just realizing there's no net. You know, the people who say, I regret nothing. That's a guy who regrets a whole lot of things. As you are falling off a tightrope and realizing you've actually given your life to the circus. That's got to be a strange set of thoughts that goes through your head as you're plummeting towards your doom at like 186,000, you know, 100. Yeah, totally. You're just, yeah, that really is the very definition of a bad. It's not like you gave your life for your country. You gave your life to fight a debilitating disease. Really, when you gave your life to the circus, that really is, one starts to reassess things, I think, at that point. We should probably break. We'll break here, come back more of Tim Riley around the corner. Later on, we continue our hunt for the second worst story of all time. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. What is
he a guy of? Probably drugs and alcohol.
Another juvenile delinquent. I am a junkie, though. Apparently, we'd like to book Danny and the Juniors.
And you know, not even Danny and the Seniors.
Okay, I can't stop that. I don't have the little zing. That really is an untoppable joke. Jesus, they got their first gold record in 1958. God damn. I can't even imagine
how old they're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year.
Oh, my God.
They have their own website.
Riff, do they?
DannyandtheJuniors.com.
Is it filled with a Comic Sans font?
Come share the magic.
And some bran.
Booking info.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got this. I'm looking at this photo right here of Danny and the Juniors. And this is from the, because I get this, I don't even know how I got on this mailing list. This Wolfman Jack Entertainment mail train. I now get once a week. Asking me to book, I mean, it's the weird spectrum of groups that this Wolfman Jack Entertainment Company offers me. I mean, literally, in the same brochure here, they're asking me to book Great Whites and the Royal Guardsman, who did Snoopy versus the Red Baron, by the way, if you were a connoisseur of one-hit wonders. I have the original 45 of Snoopy versus the Red Baron, by the way. Also, a Ricky... You would never really think that there would be a Ricky Nelson tribute act, but there it is. Also, Badfinger, like three members... You know, three members of Badfinger have killed themselves? How bad does your career have to be when three guys in your band decide to snuff it with a strap over their shower rod? Jesus. So I'm looking at this Danny and the Juniors page, and you know how it is. It's like when you go through and they find them, they do a press photo of you, and they put you in front of a screen or they put you in front of whatever, and they snap 50 photos of you, and then they take the very best photo, and that's the one they use, and they go through and they discard every photo in which something is wrong, and then they use the very best picture of you. I'm looking at the photograph here. And I think this guy in the bottom, now, I don't know that he's had a stroke at some point, but I'm telling you right now, whoever this bottom guy is in the Danny and the Juniors press photo, he looks a lot like Dennis Wilson looked towards the end of his life, where he couldn't quite make his mouth close all the way.
It looks like they're pretty much booked in Branson for a full week every month.
That's the boy right there.
Except for Saturday, May 12th, they're going to be in Indiana. The rest of the calendar looks pretty much... Oh, no, they're going to be in Bossier City, Louisiana, July 21st.
God bless them.
Nova, Michigan on the 28th. Morristown, New Jersey on June 8th.
And let me just tell you this right now. It pretty much booked in Branson. Mm-hmm. That's either got to be the name of a really depressing song about an over-the-hill musician or like somebody's autobiography. You know? Like some guy, you know, you get like some like Brewer or Shipley will write a book called Pretty Much Booked in Branson. And that'll be their life story. The other thing that this got this fight, if you don't know Danny and the Juniors, their biggest hit was a song called At the Hop. That was them, right?
That was them.
And they did Rock and Roll is Here to Stay. That was about it. And by the way, those were 50 years ago when they were already like in their late teens. I can't even fathom how old they must be in this. All of them with this thick, dark, lustrous, really unbelievably fake hair. And then
dark eyebrows. That looks like they're painted on.
What do you mean look like they're painted on?
You can always grab a picture for $10.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Who would you give it to that isn't already dead? What, is you take it right to somebody's headstone? Grandma always wanted this right above her epitaph.
That could be a prize at like a bingo game at a senior center.
Seriously, from most continent residents. And to Mr. Lewis, who held his urine all day, a Danny and the Juniors photo. Fantastic.
They also have an album for Cool Grandkids Everywhere, uh-huh. They sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. Okay. Let's all sing a nursery rhyme, Zippity Doo Dah.
I'm looking at this photo, though, and this who, I think
here comes Fonzie.
Are you kidding me?
No. You got to be a kid, though.
You got to be a
Danny
cool...
Danny and the Juniors, it's $20.
You really got to be a cool grandkid in 2000... Imagine how many concentric levels of lame this is. In 2007, giving your grandkids a Danny and the Juniors record where they're singing, Here Comes Fonzie. I mean, anyway, This photograph of this guy, and I think it's Joe Terranova. It's like if you ever saw what's his name. If you ever saw Jan from Jan and Dean, like after he'd gone off Dead Man's Curve and parts of his body didn't work anymore, and it's like he couldn't ever completely close his mouth. He would try, but like he could close, I think, the right side, but the left half of his mouth would never completely obey. It would just sort of slowly fall open over the course of like the photo shoot. That's exactly what this guy in the bottom looks like.
There's a guy on the left who looks like he just started doing Botox, but he's kind of like in the middle of his treatment.
He's on an installment plan. He can only do sections of his face at a time. Yeah. This guy in the photograph, he looks as though he's making this noise. That's it. That's the sound that would be coming out of this guy's face. All right. There you go. Fantastic. Who else can I get? I can get Danny the Juniors. The Bay City Rollers are constantly on here. They're always offering me the Bay City Rollers. Leon Russell, Commander Cody, Mark Lindsay, Badfinger, the Royal Guardsman, T.G. Shepherd. God damn. Gallery. Do you remember Gallery? Did Gallery sing It's So Nice to Be With
that
You?
That was their one hit. That was from the 70s.
It was from 1972. They were voted Best New Singles Group of 1972 by Cashbox Magazine, Tim. And apparently I can also get Maxine Nightingale. All right, there you go. Oh, and the Tramps. God damn.
I'm at the Danny and the Juniors message board, and it says, no posts. It says, show all posts. No posts.
Would you like to be the first to comment on this? It's like when you go to iTunes or AllMusic or Amazon or something, and there's some record up by a band you're really into, and you go to click reviews. No reviews. Be the first to review this record. I am never the first to review that record. Like, if I go to iTunes, I was there the other day, and I was looking at some band that I was into, and there was like nobody had ever reviewed. I mean, of the millions of people in iTunes, not one person had ever bothered to post anything about the record. And I didn't want to do it. It was too depressing. I didn't want to be the first guy to do it. It was just so sad. I just closed the window and left. Fantastic. You know what also is that way? Is the Peter Noon message board. If you ever go to peternoon.com, boy, I used to, and I've known some people, and Peter Noon was the guy who sang for Herman's Hermits.
Mm-hmm.
I have known some people, and they're always weird, overweight suburban women, who are just the biggest Peter Noon fanatics. You want to talk about a guy whose hair is like full-on stapled to the top of his head. I mean, just, and I swear to God, if you watch the little video clips on peternoon.com of him performing, and it's, you know, he just tours and sings his, you know, Henry VIII, I Am, and Mrs. Brown, You Got a Lovely Daughter, and all that crap. And there are moments when he sort of tries to sort of swing around like a rock and a roller, and he will tilt his head, and it's like he will...
You can hear those hips crack.
Totally.
You can.
And he realized he really shouldn't have done that.
Have you ever seen someone perform that is so old you actually get uncomfortable watching them because you're afraid that they're going to injure themselves in some way? Mm-hmm. I mean, and God bless him. You know, I'm a huge Kiss fan, but I remember right after Paul Stanley had his hips replaced. And how, what a sad statement. Right after the Star Child had his hips replaced, seeing him in concert and him like, you know, and that outfit he wears weighs like 50 pounds, and then the guitar's probably another 10, and he's like jumping up and down, pogoing, and we were all kind of like, and we all knew that he just had hip surgery, and we're all sort of cringing, just waiting for like...
One of those ribbons is going to snap right off.
Imagine being there in concert when one of Paul Stanley's hips disintegrates. How sad. I've actually seen Kiss in concert enough that when we saw them at Clark County a couple years ago with Poison, which I say unashamedly... They're doing that thing that they do at the end of Deuce, where they all line up, and if Gene and Paul and, I guess, Tommy Thayer, but they all line up, and they do the synchronized guitar playing, and they go like, one, it's like this weird Broadway Rockettes thing. They do one, two, three, and then they do, and they do like a full headbang, where they throw their head all the way down, and then they bring it back up. And every time I see them do that, I swear to God, one of these days they're going to do it, and one of their wigs is just going to come straight off. And you know that's immediately going to be in the internet. And that'll be the end of that whole thing. How could you ever see Kiss again having been there when Paul Stanley's wig comes off? I don't even know what we're talking about. This is David. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, David. Do you have a comment about Danny and the Juniors?
No. It's about this whole talent agency thing that keeps sending you all these has-beens.
Yes, Wolfman Jack Entertainment.
Yes, well, which is funny in itself because the guy is dead.
Yeah, I know. He doesn't know this exists. He's been dead for like 15 years.
Yeah, he's still earning money for the company.
Yes.
Well, here's the idea. You got Scotty J, who just did a really excellent job for you, getting all these big-name interviews for
right.
you.
Right, yes.
And he has a degree, and he wants his own show. Let's give him a chance. Let him interview some of the nuttiest or wackiest people you can find at this agency. I think it'd be good radio.
Have him interview... Well, let's see. I could have him interview... Wait, hold on. I could have him interview this guy who does a tribute to Bob Seger. God, how sad.
I mean, we could even play along with it. The callers could call in and have, like, serious questions for the guy and make him feel good and everything. And you could feed him questions like Don and Mike do where the guy couldn't hear you.
Maybe. I don't know. I get one of these every week. Perhaps we'll wait and see what next week brings.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you. There you go. All right, the Royal Guardsman. You know, when I was a kid, I used to play that 45 of Snoopy versus the Red Baron because my dad had it. And I got to tell you, that was just, when you're like at 9 years old, that's one of the most amazing songs you've ever heard. All right, here's Tim Riley, the love of God.
And now, Danny and the Juniors.
Really?
The nation's number one hit at the Hop.
What show is this from, I wonder? What does it say? Was this in American Graffiti?
But not this version.
This is the black and white kinescope I'm looking at right now.
Well, this must be Danny.
Okay, so that's for the 55 and up demographic. So there you go. For the, if you've tuned in looking for Kiss and been unable to find it, by the way,
here.
We just need to segue from this into something like merengue music, and then we'll be all set. Let's see here. They apparently toured with such other American rock and roll acts as... Okay, let me do a quick Dead or Alive. Tim Riley, Fats Domino.
Dead.
No, he's alive.
How can he be alive?
I
thought he drowned in the Louisiana flood.
No, he was found
after presumed drowning.
No, I think he floats. He's a large man. He floats. No, I like it. You were all like it warped your notion of time space continuity when I said he was alive. No, I heard him on. I heard him being interviewed on, like, NPR or something after the flood because they all thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And you could tell the nation, everybody was cranking up their obituaries, and then they found him, and you could tell that there was a little bit of a deflation in the room when they found out he was alive because NPR was totally getting ready for, like, some American Masters retrospective, some, you know, American Roots retrospective. No, he's alive and a jerk, by the way. Alive and just a dick. Just like a dick like you wouldn't even believe. Chuck Berry.
Dead.
dead.
No, he's no, he's alive. Are you angry about that, too?
Nothing to view him.
No, it's Chuck Berry alive and also an a-hole, by the way. Chuck Berry, perhaps the largest a-hole in rock and roll. Really, I mean, just off the charts.
That's why these people keep on living.
Yeah, they're just too filled with hate to die. That's my plan, actually, by the way, is to be so hate-filled that I actually can't be killed. Jerry Lee Lewis.
Dead.
No! No, sir. Jerry Lee Lewis. You're just screwing with me now. Jerry Lee Lewis is alive, too. He just put out another record last year that no one cares about. The Platters. Well, I don't even know who's in the Platters. Apparently, they all played on the Alan Freed Big Beat Show. Alan Freed is dead, though.
Alan Freed.
He died of alcoholism and bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Dick Clark killed him. Let's see. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry. Well, indirectly. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Mohamed Orangoni has made the national news. An Iraq war veteran has been ordered into a Veterans Affairs hospital after his roommate at a Minnesota college found guns in his dorm room and then pipe bombs in his pickup truck. The bomb squad was called. Why is it that we just found out about this? April 20th.
That was last week.
I know, and this story just came out.
Where was this at?
It happened in Minnesota. Maybe that's why.
Oh, all right. So not here in Portland.
No. To dispose of two pipe bombs, Ben Ring is a student at Martin Luther King College. The 22-year-old is charged with felony possession of explosives. The charges surprised Oregon soldiers who remember Ring as a devout Christian who didn't drink or swear. He wanted to become a minister. Ring, who was deployed to Iraq with the Oregon Army National Guard, nearly died in 2004 after his Corvallis-based unit was ambushed north of Baghdad. College President Theodore Olson told the media yesterday that someone dropped the ball on Ring, saying he is suffering either from post-traumatic stress or traumatic brain injury.
All right.
So that happened April 20th.
That's the first we're hearing about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. Amazingly enough, we're getting email about Danny and the Juniors. I don't believe I'm going to read any of it, though.
They have a big fan base.
They really do. Well, Cox, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Speaking of dead artists.
Yes.
Is James Brown buried yet?
They did bury him last month, sir.
Last month?
Yes.
So that would have been December, January, February, March.
It was a good 120
last
days.
Last month, April, or last month, March?
Last month, March. I'm sorry. That was my mistake. Last month, March. So I do believe it was a good 90 days, at least.
Jeez. And you got to have Scotty J. slip in, like, when Nasty Banana comments when he's interviewing people and make him do push-ups.
I don't really know. I mean, I'm not really sure that Scotty J. interviewing the Bay City Rollers is the way to rating success, sir.
Does it really matter? I mean, he's talking about how he supports Bush. You were not exactly trying to connect with more listeners with him talking.
I suppose that's the case. I guess as soon as it's a Scotty J. submit period, it becomes a bit of a wash. All right.
Just have him, like, I don't know. It doesn't really matter at this point.
This phone call started strong and then just disintegrated into nothing. All right, thank you. We're done. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Time for a snuff watch.
Here's your snuff watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
The Reverend Alden, who ran the Walnut Grove Church at Little House on the Prairie from 1974 to 1983. Actor Dabbs Greer has died. He was 90 years old. He'd been battling kidney and heart disease, dying at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. His career spanned more than a half century, including roles in over 100 films. He was a familiar face, sort of every man. He played merchants, preachers, businessmen, and other pillars of the community, as well as a few assorted victims. He was born in Missouri in 1917 and started being a $5 extra in the 1938 film Jesse James. And also, he played the first person saved by Superman in the very first episode of The Adventures of Superman, 1952. His role is uncredited. He was brought back to appear in a major role as an innocent man about to go to the electric chair in the first episode of the second season.
Look, here's the thing. I don't mean to sound... I don't mean to sound like a man without...
He never married and there were no survivors and he died alone.
I was going to say that I don't mean to sound, heartless about these things, but apparently I'm just commenting on a sad reality. Well, I was just going to say, God bless him. It sounds, I was going to say it sounds like he lived a full happy life, but I guess that wasn't true either.
No, he died in Pasadena, so that's not too bad.
Well, his life was miserable.
Better suburbs.
His life was miserable and painful, but at least it was long.
He was also in Bonanza. He was Mr. Jonas.
Okay.
He also played on The Fugitive. He was in the Brady, he played in the Brady Bunch.
As what? What did he play in the Brady Bunch?
I don't know. Probably just some bit parts.
Something that wasn't enough to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
Something just enough to give him hope that his career would revive. So, my only observation was going to be that, you know, he passed away this week, and while it's sad to see most people die, not everyone, there's people whose deaths we revel in, but while it's sad for someone to die, at least it happened this week when Nellie Olson, Alison Arngrim, I guess I should figure out how to pronounce her name. Arngrim? Is that how you pronounce it? Scotty, pleased to be telling me the name of the person I'm interviewing on Friday, so I don't just continue to introduce her as TV's Nellie Olson. I guess I should break myself of that habit as well, because she's probably not sick of that, too. Hey, Nellie Olson! Arngrim. That's an awkward, that's a kind of a mouthful of a name. You think she would have changed that to something better. She would have had a manager or something.
Well, her name
Arngrim
probably appeared at the very end next to the accountants in the credits.
With.
Yeah.
Also. It was like, she didn't even, it wasn't even as Nellie Olson. It was just that with, and then they list like everybody else who was in it. All right, Alison Arngrim. Anyway, so if this guy who played the minister on, you know, Little House on the Prairie, if he had to die, at least it was this week. So we have something to talk to Alison Arngrim about this Friday. Because really, what am I going to ask her after, so you were on Little House on the Prairie? Mm-hmm. And then it's just going to be awkward silence for, like, the rest of the 15-minute segments. So, all right.
Well, I guess my biggest question on her website, one of the links says Michael Landon was no saint, and then you hit it and there's nothing there. So something had to be there at some point.
So we should ask her her worst anecdote about Michael Landon.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst thing Michael Landon ever did to you?
Well, he had an affair with his makeup lady.
Yeah, in your face. I don't even know who I'm saying that to. We should just... The Rick Emerson Michelle sullies the memories of beloved celebrities. Today at 1:30. Here's a great email. Rick, whatever happened to you? And Tim. And Sarah. Sarah at least comments on your comments. Does she comment on my comments? Is she redundant? Sarah at least comments on you. Scotty, what a great father image. He has a drinking problem and doesn't care about people.
Oh, she's a vegetarian.
Fantastic.
All right. Alison Arngrim is.
I don't get the point of that email.
I don't know. He's upset at me. I think he's upset that I don't give money to the homeless. Whatever. The homeless never give money to me. All right. 503. It's not like people lining up to give me free food. Actually, there are. It's 503-733-2970. Like that pirate place, for example. All right. Here's.
She often fainted on the set because temperatures are routinely 100 plus degrees, and her wig used to make her head bleed.
How can a wig make your head bleed?
Well, if it's...
Is it made out of nails?
Well, we're not sure how it was fastened.
Let's see, we don't have any human hair, so we're just going to use wire. So, hold still, Allison. This may twinge a little. I'm just picturing a guy with a rivet gun. Her wig... I got to write this down. Her wig... I got to quit snorting, too. Her wig often made her head bleed.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a wig... Her wig often...
One made out of steel wool, apparently.
The Brillo wig often made her head bleed.
Bad. Oh, she was number 96 on VH1's 100 Greatest Kid Stars.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody kind of gets... Everybody who's ever been on television gets on that list. There's 100 slots they got to fill. All right. Rick, I saw Chuck Berry twice play with the Grateful Dead in Portland. What? That doesn't make any sense. He says, you haven't lived till you've seen the geriatric duck walk. Maybe you have, but it was pretty funny. You want to see something insane, you watch, and you got to get the DVD. You got to get the DVD of Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, which is the Chuck Berry biography that Taylor Hackford did about 20 years ago. You get the new expanded version where they show the behind the scenes. You want to talk about a guy who is just like an off-the-charts a-hole. Just a guy... The best part is when they start talking about how when Chuck Berry was filming his documentary on which millions and millions of dollars from Universal Studios, you know, Universal funded it, that was running, and that Chuck Berry at one point started refusing to show up for filming unless they gave him literally a brown paper bag with $50,000 in it every day. He would refuse to show up, and they would go to his house, and he would just be sitting there in his underwear, and he wouldn't leave the house until they gave him a paper bag with $50,000 in it. And then he would show up. Also, they note that when Chuck Berry, and I don't think he tours anymore. He's like 100 years old. But when he would play, Chuck Berry would show up, and you would have to have the backing band ready, because most of his songs, a lot of his songs anyway, have the same chord progression. So you can kind of figure it out in advance what you need to play. So it was your responsibility to have the backing band. He shows up in his Cadillac like 5 minutes before showtime. He walks into the office, gets his money in a suitcase. He demands it in cash. It's like 80 grand in cash in a suitcase, which he then takes with him on stage. He plays for exactly, and they said he actually had a stopwatch sitting somewhere on stage, so he played for exactly what the contract required. If you wanted him to do the duck walk, it was like an extra 10 grand. If you wanted him to speak to the audience, it was like another 5 grand. Like, if you didn't pay the extra 5 grand, he wouldn't even speak to the audience. He would just sort of glower menacingly between songs and then walk off. And then as soon as he's done, he just walks off and gets into his Cadillac and speeds away. Just he's like an absolute jerk. I think because he just got so screwed over and over again in the early stages of career that he just became like a bastard about the whole thing.
Don't really blame him.
I don't. You know who's to blame for that, Tim Riley?
Who?
Whitey.
Yep.
Let's, sir, do you have a Nellie Olson question?
Actually, it's not a question you could ask her. Somebody from Little House on the Prairie.
Is this a question about her bleeding scalp, sir?
No.
Okay.
Why does she have a bleeding scalp?
I don't know, but we're going to find out on Friday.
Very good. Somebody from Little House on the Prairie grew up in Portland, and I knew her brother. I never watched the show, so I have no idea which character it was, but. Ask her about the chick that was on Little House on the Prairie that lived in Portland.
Wait, so are you talking about a character or an actress from Portland?
An actress.
There was
an actress on Little House on the Prairie was from Portland. Her dad owned the River Queen restaurant downtown.
Oh, this is going to be a gripping interview. I can already tell. So did you?
Well, you were sounding like you were really. You know, like you needed some help. I was just trying to help.
Oh, no, don't. I'm not taking your help for granted, sir. There's no need to be defensive. I'm simply saying if this is the best we can do, and I don't mean any offense by that.
Wow, she attended Dana Plato's funeral.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say she attended like a Dana Plato, like acting school or something.
She's currently going to acting school.
Act dead. No. Don't move. Okay, now hold. All right, yes? Are we
Dana
done?
Dana Plato's dead. I guess.
Okay, thanks. Dana Plato's dead. Dana Plato is dead. Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, you know, again, I thought yesterday was sort of an anomaly. Yesterday had a weird vibe around the whole day where everything just sort of seemed off kilter, kind of like a wagon with one wobbly wheel. Today has exactly the same feel to it, and I'm not saying that's bad. It just is one of those shows where things are a little strange. How can I help you, sir?
Well, I will avoid talking about renters again. Okay. However, of the randoms, my wife used to play Mad Libs on the set of Little House on the Prairie with Laura when they were kids. My mother-in-law was an actress, and she was on a couple of different episodes. And, yeah, it's blisteringly hot, and they're all dressed in, you know, multiple layers. It was a horrific place to work.
A horrific place to work. What roles did your mother-in-law play in Little House on the Prairie?
She was on two episodes that I've seen, one of which is called My Ellen, is where her daughter drowns and then she kidnaps Laura, puts her down in a little cellar and starts calling her daughter's name. It's really kind of creepy.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Does she? Okay. I just keep picturing that. One of them in a basket. That guy, he's putting Laura Ingalls down a well.
It's really, I mean, I can't let my daughter watch it because grandma is a psycho in it. It's kind of creepy.
Some of those creepy shows, like, I guess, the brothers set a fire in the blind school that killed most of the kids, including, what's-her-name's baby, one episode.
Yeah, I can't remember one. Yeah, it's just all horrific. It's all, you know, across the plains and let's die type things.
Yeah, it really is kind of a disturbing program when you think about it. When you go back and really, and I can't believe we're spending this much time talking about Little House on the Prairie.
Well, it's a prelude to Friday's show.
It is. No, it's an overture. You're right. And if there's one thing the male 18 to 44 demographic cares about, it is Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, thank you for knowing.
That's what I do, sir. But you go back and watch that show, and it really is strange that it was marketed as family entertainment, because I mean, you're right, every week there's a fire, or someone gets some incurable disease that blinds them, or someone is run down, by an ox cart or something. And let me ask you this, what is the Indian presence on that show like?
It's not existent. Only white people are in that show.
Really?
Yeah.
Does not happen.
There are no. I mean,
no, okay. None. They're not allowed.
And no Irish. Let me ask you this, and I know that this paints me as perhaps ill-informed, and I know that that's stunning considering that earlier today we thought that Boxing Day was about returning gifts to the store. What state, is it Oklahoma? What state does Little House on the Prairie take place in?
Like, not where it's filmed, where it's actually supposed to be.
Where is it actually supposed to take place?
Oh, man, you're out of my league. I have no idea.
Like North Dakota, South Dakota, one of those three.
You're just bluffing, though.
No, I think it is.
You're picking a state that's dull where nothing happens, and you're just assuming that it must be Little House on the Prairie. So I'm saying, would there not have been an Indian population at that time?
Maybe, but this is television. Only white people are on TV, especially during the state. Unless you're moving on up and you're the Jefferson.
It's true. I suppose that is true. He didn't want to offend the delicate sensibilities of Americans by implying that there were non-whites living in this country ever at any time. All right. 503-733-2970.
Jesus God.
All right.
I'm still looking for actresses who've
been
a little Portland.
Who've been a Little House in the Prairie.
So far, I'm not coming up.
By the way, we're breaking here. We'll come back with Jim Roop. We have more. Our hunt for the second war story. Top five. The rest of today, all Wednesday, Thursday, all we're doing, really. It's not all we're doing, but we are spending a great amount of time coming up with questions for TV's Nellie Olson, who will be in the studio with us on Friday. Also, Alice Cooper. And maybe George Carlin. We're not entirely sure about that. All right. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. You may look the other way. We can find one. Hi there, it's Rick Emerson. Isn't that time for a Beavis and Butthead revival of some kind?
No.
It's been like 12 years.
Wasn't it just revived a few years ago?
No, well, they ran the reruns, but they haven't done like a... Beavis and Butthead have not returned in any fashion. I think they did like a little tiny bit on the VMAs a couple years ago. But that show's been off the air for over a decade now. I mean, they did the movie, it was over a decade ago. It's about time for Beavis and Butthead to come back. I'm decreeing it now. Make it so. 503-733. They're not like my judge is doing anything. 503-733-2970. Rick, Little House on the Prairie took place in Missouri. But this one says, Rick, don't you remember it took place in Minnesota? Minnesota and Missouri are both states, right? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. 503. I don't want to take anything for granted today. Well, with all the Boxing Day unpleasantness and the stuff. And I don't know what goddamn Arbor Day is. Let's say right now, I don't care. Don't call. Stop it. Put the phones down. All right. We're going to get Jeff in just a moment here. So, Jeff, hang tight, my brother. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome from Los Angeles, I love LA, James Roop. Hello, sir.
Hola. Como esta, casa de Pepe?
Why, how very inclusive of you, my friend.
That's what I'm all about.
And, you know, we're trying to embrace all cultures and peoples on the Rick Emerson Show today.
Tightly, yes, indeed.
Hey, before we do anything else, let me just say this. I would encourage you to pick up a copy of the New York Times today. The Sunday New York Times, if you can still find it. It's probably online as well. Page 13 of the Sunday New York Times.
Are you in it?
What do you think? No.
Well, what the hell do I want it for?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You want it because there, I swear to God, is an entire page devoted to the many, many phases of Phil Spector's hair.
Oh, very nice.
It's kind of like the thing we did at Listener Party 10, actually. We had a whole thing showing the many stages of Rick Emerson's hair. They kind of stole this from me, but there's an entire... they do like 65, 75, 93, 2004, 2005, when he had the big Ludwig von Beethoven going on, the Einstein, and now in 2007, when he looks like Mrs. Landingham from the West Wing, there was a whole page about the what Phil... And, he, you know, can I just tell you this? Even back in 65, when his hair was probably real, it looked fake. It never looked real. His hair looked like it was bought and paid for, like from jump, man. It never looked like it was authentic in any way. So I would encourage you to pick up the New York Times, take a look at it. It's good for a laugh, my friend.
I will find it, I promise you that.
All right. Hey, are you guys getting, last year you guys had like 100,000 people or something in the streets? People were, there was like 100,000 people marching?
Yeah, there were a lot.
What do you got this year, like 1,000?
About 27.
Just people just have this
28,
sort of,
there's another one.
People sort of milling about doing a whole lot of nothing. I'm unclear.
This is more like a parade, man. I mean, it's an interesting atmosphere. There's not a whole lot of nasty yelling and screaming about the immigrant rights as much as it is, you know, buying fruit, churros, and, you know, having a good old time down here.
I'm unclear about when May Day started to become... May Day at some point became like Labor Day, and then, or, you know, Union Day, and then it became like Immigrant Day, and now it just sort of seems to be come out and hang around and wear a Doctor's Who's hat and talk about pot legalization or whatever else happens to be on your mind day.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much what it is down here. I mean, everybody, you know, they're all saying the same thing. What I'm confused about and what nobody can answer is, first of all, immigrants do have rights in this country.
Right.
But distinguishing between legal and illegal, that's a whole other ballgame, but nobody wants to do that.
Sure. Well, that was the thing last year, right, when there was like 100,000 people and nobody was complaining. Like, I don't think anybody begrudges the rights of immigrants, because we're all kind of immigrants. I don't think anybody begrudges the rights of immigrants to have rights. But
yeah,
it was...
Nobody says you can't come here.
Yeah. So
everybody, but
unless you're Pat,
Pat
Buchanan.
Yeah.
Stay home.
You can't come here and ruin my life at the same time.
Exactly. So there's a whole lot of nothing. So really, because in Portland, there's a whole segment of society that just sort of sits around waiting for an opportunity to go loot the Nike store. And I don't really know that that's materializing. So this is one of those days where the news crews and the helicopter, the camera helicopters are always disappointed because they're hoping to see like open fires burning in major metropolitan areas. And they're going to be disappointed. There's nothing happening today.
There were a lot of businesses that closed down today downtown. In fact, the Phil Spector trial got put on hold because of the expected vast numbers of people taking to the streets. But, you know, I think maybe there's 5,000-10,000 tops. It's not the 500,000 that was here last year. I don't know what it's going to be this afternoon as people get out of work and school.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. Are they televising the Phil Spector trial right now? I mean, not today, but I mean, in general, is it now being televised?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like there's something exciting needs to happen. I think at some point, I mean, are they going to try to stick him on the stand?
No way.
Because that would be the only thing that would probably get people to tune in at this point, is just to see how crazy he actually is.
You know, I think that they'd be stupid to put him on the stand. I think what the defense will do is just use science. Just saying, you know, he doesn't have enough gunshot residue on him. You know, the way Lana Clarke's teeth blew out instead of some chips being lodged in her throat. I think just the crime scene itself, how much spatters on her and not him. I think they're going to use DNA and science to really be the star witness in their case and avoid putting Spector on it. I don't even know that he could put a couple of words together. He seems like a guy that when you get him on the stand would go, I like the big beefy burger. And that's about all you get out of him.
I think the state ought to make some sort of a deal with people with like celebrity defendants where if you agree to go on the witness stand for like 2 hours someday during sweeps week, they'll let you, I mean, they'll like put your name in a lottery, and there's like a 1 in 50 chance that they'll just acquit right then. Like, they'll give you, you know what I mean? They'll let you draw a number out of a hopper, and there's like a 1 in 50 chance that you can walk that day. But in exchange for that, you got to promise to testify when commercial rates are the highest.
Yeah, they'll do that at the same time they actually enact rollerball as a sport.
Oh, don't knock rollerball, my friend.
Oh, I love that. Are you kidding? What a great movie. James Caan, though, not the recent.
Not the LL Cool J version?
No.
All right. Well, we've covered rollerball and Phil Spector and people looting the Nike store. That's probably, we probably squeezed everything we can out of this. Everything.
Are you having much immigration issues up there today?
No.
Any May Day rallies going on?
No, because we had it last year where there was just all of these the people that were kind of marching. And then this year it sort of seems to be like, I think it's kind of crept up on everybody this year. I don't think anybody really, Scotty pointed this on the screen. The only thing we have this year is a bunch of just the unshaven hippies stinking and dancing around a pole somewhere. That's pretty much it.
So, that's always nice.
Yeah, there's only one kind of pole dancing that most Portlanders are interested in. It is not the kind with hippies, my friend. All right, enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you.
Jim Roop in Los Angeles. Thank you, sir. Aaron, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello,
and thanks for taking my call.
God bless you.
I'm a huge fan, and I just moved back from West Virginia, where I was looking for an inbred girlfriend that was so inbred she had fingers growing out of her chin.
Have you been saving that joke up?
Actually, no. I've been using it ever since I moved back from West Virginia. Actually, ever since I moved to West Virginia.
Why did you move to West Virginia? Seriously, why would you do that?
It was actually
to find a, it was for the stereotype. I had a job offer, and I wanted to find the stereotype. But I am so glad to be back and listening to you again. But the reason I'm calling is when you went into commercial last time, you played one of the greatest songs ever made. I mean, I know Abe Vigoda was yesterday at the 970 greatest things ever.
Yeah.
But Ozzy Osbourne and Weasel Zappa singing Staying Alive.
I do like that. I do pride myself on the fact that we, I think, have the best bumper music of any radio program currently on the air.
And I found that song going in New Orleans during Mardi Gras before the whole hurricane thing. And we were looking for the best band with the worst promoter, meaning the best band you'd never heard of.
Right.
And we saw that song on the jukebox, and we had to play it about, I don't know, 30 times.
Yeah, it's Ozzy singing Stayin' Alive backed by Dweezil Zappa, and it's off the Prince of Darkness box set that came out a few years back.
Oh, okay. I've just been wondering where to find it.
Yeah, it's like disc 5, I think, of the Ozzy Osbourne. There's one disc that's all covers. It's like I think he does like Eleanor Rigby, and he does, like Born to be Wild, and it's just some weird crap. Just a whole bunch of stuff that you would never expect Ozzy Osbourne to sing. But I think that's where that is. It's the Prince of Darkness box set, sir.
And that's why I call Rick Emerson, because he knows, and I've been on the computer, I've been everywhere looking at that, and there's always been copyright laws and infringements and blah, blah, blah. They can't play it on the internet, so now I know.
Well, there you know, now you know where to get it. Well, thank you, sir. We're glad you're back in town.
Thanks.
Thank you, my friend. There you go. All right. It's 503. There we go. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. But there doesn't seem to be any sort of consensus about this little house on the prairie business. People seem to be equally split between Minnesota and Missouri. Rick, this email says, this guy, a man, by the way, says, I just consulted my Little House on the Prairie books. It is Minnesota. All right, so there you go.
All right, my friend, you know Lisa. Lisa really loved that show, and she said it started in Minnesota, then moved to Missouri, which is where Little House on the Prairie starts.
Oh, I see, because they're wagon training.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the deal? Do you have the theme?
Maybe I do.
We didn't want to come back with this because it's kind of low energy, but this is. Part where what's her name falls in the clover.
That's the very end.
Yeah.
And her residuals are $36 every time she falls.
Yes. We knew that the other day. Fantastic.
Well, the weird thing about this open was it was up for several years and these girls had grown up and they were still using the same open.
Yeah. Did anyone bother to reshoot it? That'll cost $5,000.
Well, what happened was the Simi Valley area probably became a subdivision by them. And the open lands ceased to exist.
Just full of track housing.
Mm-hmm.
Track housing and swimming pools. Oh, that's a great... Can you play just the beginning again? That's the most melancholy opening to a TV theme song.
Well, it's kind of like the beginning of Star Trek. I mean, that sounds like the same thing.
I suppose.
Well, you know, the twins are going to die in the fire.
It's foreshadowing the eventual blinding and death of a child. Good times. Well, you know, another... Because they don't... Look, I don't mean to sound all old when I say this, but they don't really make TV theme songs like that anymore because I think TV theme songs... I know this makes me sound hopelessly out of date and like I'm just completely out of touch with my own American pop culture, but do TV shows even have opening theme songs anymore? I mean, like Seinfeld had like that ow, 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 ow
yeah.
between... But I mean, there was no opening theme to that.
I don't believe so.
I mean, the shows don't even have... There are. I think Friends was probably the last really popular American show that even had a theme song, right?
Yeah.
Because now they just because it's all about trying to fit in more commercial time and more program time, and so they just leap directly into the program. Shows don't even have opening credit sequences anymore. Like The Sopranos does, I guess, but that's HBO, so they kind of make their own rules there. Like The Shield doesn't. And I'm running through in my head the shows that I watch on television, and I don't think any of them have opening credit sequences. It's just like right into the action. Let me just tell you this. Here's the other saddest TV theme song ever. Go.
Oh, me?
I know the hands-down winner. The saddest TV theme
song
ever.
The Wonder Years theme?
No. What is the Wonder Years theme? Is that, the, is that with a...
Well,
what
it's like Goodbye Little Help of... Yeah.
Is that Would You Get By With the Love of My Friends? That's
yeah,
not sad.
But that show was so sad and always...
Well, that arrangement of it was.
Yeah, that's... But the, I'm talking about strictly in terms of the theme.
Oh.
I got the
depressing?
Hand, I got the hands-down winner for the most depressing TV theme song ever. All right.
Well, is it a soap opera?
It's not the greatest American... No, nor is it the Sanford and Son theme. Thank you. No, it's the theme song to the Waltons. And it doesn't help that that whole, the opening credit sequence is all like in sepia tones and it's a bunch of people eating dirt for dinner. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You know, I've never seen that.
You know what I'm talking about, the Walt...
No.
And it starts, I do believe, by the way, and I don't, I'm not entirely sure about this, but I do believe that the Waltons' opening theme song does in fact have a Jew's harp.
Is it this?
Yeah.
Why is it so depressing?
It's completely...
Are they eating dirt?
Well, that it's the house full of kids where their dad is engaged in sawing wood in a sawmill. And you know that they're this close away from danger because it is the depression.
Exactly. And it's just very melancholy. It is. It's a very melancholy-sounding TV theme. Or maybe it's a generational thing. Although, now that I think about it, can you play that back one more time? Just the oh, is this, was that coming out of Tim's computer?
I thought it was coming out of your computer.
Can you play the Waltons theme one more time? I have a revelation about the Waltons theme, and I bet that's something you never thought you'd hear.
I got it, Tim. If you
this show really is just completely pointless sometimes.
It's like coming back up.
There you go.
Okay, first of all, doesn't it sound like an insurance commercial? The friends of the family, Prudential. All right.
Yes, brilliant observation.
I have totally discovered where John Mellencamp has stolen like half of his song arrangements from. It's all from the Waltons theme. Like that, like Cherry... Right here, listen to this. This is totally like Cherry Bomb and Check It Out and Paper and Fire. All of John Mellencamp's songs are just rip-offs of the Waltons theme. I just realized that now. And it's just a bunch of sepia-toned, like Ken Burns-looking stock photos of, like, poor people having to, like, you know, having to, like, share, like a meatless chicken bone for dinner. You know,
they didn't really suffer enough.
It says Tim Riley. They should have been stricken with cancer. All right, let's see. Eric, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hey, Eric, sorry.
Welcome
Rick,
to the trivial program of the month, yes.
Great show, I'm with you right there.
Thank you.
You were talking about the most depressing theme song, and I usually agree with you 100%, but this time I'm going to have to call no. The most depressing theme song is the Incredible Hulk at the end, just the piano, and he's walking down the street with a backpack slung on his back, walking into the sunset alone.
Now
yeah,
I know this
totally right.
I know this makes me a bad geek, but I can't conjure up the Incredible Hulk theme song in my head. Here's what, let me just tell you this. Here's what I remember of the Incredible Hulk. I don't even remember the closing theme, but I do remember. And didn't they change his name from David Banner to Bruce Banner for the TV show?
Yeah, they definitely changed his name to Bruce Banner. I think it's because the name was like Bill Bixby and the Bees had something to do with. Maybe he just couldn't answer the right name.
And he was too dumb to... Bill, come on! But they say at the beginning, Dr. Bruce Banner, experimenting with gamma radiation in an attempt to discover the hidden powers that all humans have. Oh, is this it?
Yeah,
and the
theme song at the beginning was terribly fast. Like...
Incredible Hulk theme, this sounds like the Tales from the Crypt theme.
That's when he's getting ugly and mad, but the end, the sing, 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 that's the sad part.
Oh, now we have to find it. Now it's just going to bug me until somebody sends us the Incredible... Hold on a second.
You'll get it. I got to go, Rick.
All right, thank you, sir.
Best show ever.
God bless you.
I never watched this.
This sounds too contemporary to be the old Hulk theme.
It says it's from retro junk.
Well, hold on. Let's listen. It sounds very Danny Elfman.
No, that, there's no backpack.
That's completely not the original Hulk suit.
Here's the 1982 one.
Okay, this is the 1982 Incredible Hulk theme song. Which Scotty also says on the screen, says, sad, sad song.
Okay, I'm going to let it buffer first.
Here's another one. Here's another guy. Incredible Hulk, saddest theme song ever. Really?
Yeah, you're totally schooled on this, right?
I don't, it's not that I'm, I just don't know. I only remember the opening narration. I don't remember the actual,
All right, here we go.
All right. I don't know what the hell
you find
that is. That is just, you know what?
It says 1982.
That is very distinctly the sound of a space gun. I heard a space gun firing. Are you sure that's not the Incredible Hulk cartoon? I think that might actually be the Incredible Hulk cartoon that you're playing there. All right. Hello, and welcome as the Rick Emerson Show wastes your time. Let's see. Todd, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
You kind of missed the mark on this one, I got to say, because you know the actual lyrics for the program MASH?
Oh, suicide is painless.
That,
yeah. I mean, that doesn't get much more depressing than the lyrics from that song.
That's true, and it's got that haunting, and I know that this is not, I mean, it is kind of a generational thing, but that show is so frequently in reruns, and it still runs today, that I think anybody, there's like a Pavlov reaction when you hear that dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, those opening guitar notes of Suicide is Painless.
Exactly.
Okay, no, I can see that.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. Thank
that
you.
Music always depressed me, because it came on after a show that I would watch all the time that I just don't like it. Anyway, I'm sorry, I was looking for the cartoons, I didn't realize that it was a real person.
Oh, come on. Did you not know that there was a Hulk live-action show?
No, I didn't know. But I have it now.
Oh, I should have specified that we were talking about the Hulk live-action. Yeah, the Hulk cartoon was terrible. Okay, this is the theme song to the Hulk live-action show?
Yes, I'm sorry for wasting your time.
That's fine.
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now, when David Banner grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs.
You know that Eric guy's weeping right now?
The creature is driven by rage and pursued by an investigative reporter.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Commit.
Of course.
David Banner is believed to be dead, and he must let the world think that he is dead until he can find a way to control the raging spirit that dwells within him.
That's totally depressing.
Okay.
It's him standing over a grave that says David Bruce Banner with his backpack on.
And see, and that's not the one. The guy was talking about the TV closing theme, but you can totally hear the refrain there. You can hear, or, you know, whatever it is. You can hear the The piece of music he's referring to. It's arranged differently, but that dun 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 dun. And I totally remember now in the closing theme, it is slightly different. And again, he's walking down the road, a nomad, a transient, because the whole, I forgot that he had to fake his own, that the world thought he was dead. I totally forgot about that. All right. It's 503-733-2970. How behind are we here?
15 minutes. Right? Yeah.
Really? Sam, are you prepared to bless the people with your news?
Certainly.
Fantastic.
I'm hearing a hum, though.
Take a break. That's Sarah's computer, I think. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner as we continue, plus more inane phone calls about meaningless television blather. Zing. 503-733-2970. Rick Emerson Show. Back after this.
Suicide is painless. It brings on many.
see why they just chewed the lyrics when it came time to make it into a kooky sitcom. Yeah, this is the version they use in the movie, the Altman movie, and it's when suicide, it's when Painless the dentist commits suicide, or attempts to. I always thought, and then we'll go to the news desk here, I always thought that they missed, because this is what opens the movie, I think. I think the MASH movie opens with this. I always thought they missed the boat, because in that final episode of MASH, what is it, Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, or whatever it's called, that final episode of MASH, and there's that sequence where, what is it, where Hawkeye lifts off or whatever in the helicopter, and then BJ has spelled out, like, goodbye in the rocks. I always thought they should have ended the series with this song. Song with the lyrics, kind of a book ending sort of a thing. And what a depressing song. Just give me the creeps.
It's making me really uncomfortable.
Making me feel awkward. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
There are two versions of this story. Turnout is expected for the May Day March in Portland. And the second version is, not too many people are expected to turn out for the May Day March in Portland.
Exactly.
So you can take your pick. And whatever it is, now they estimated 10,000 people took part last year. How they counted that, we don't know, but there were a lot of people. And they all walked by Quiznos last year, so we don't know if they're heading in that direction this year. It is scheduled to begin at 4 o'clock and will take place on Broadway, Washington Street, 2nd Avenue, and Madison. Last year's festivities caused delays with TriMet riders, so if you're riding TriMet, make sure you leave early. And apparently this is going to be about legal immigration this year.
Okay.
So one of everyone's favorite topics. So we'll find out what happens. Meanwhile, New York lawmakers are proposing stiffer fines and more prison time for flashers. That's some 70s trend that's apparently coming back. The proposal costs you fines of up to $1,000 and up to a year in jail for those who flash in New York City. Several reasons have caused this new legislation, including the public's concern about children being exposed to indecency in New York City. Of all places.
Seriously, where crack flows like the River Ganges. All right, well, whatever.
Police arrested 556 flashers last year.
Is this really a big problem? Are we
Apparently
talking about...
So. They even started an undercover operation to catch flashers.
Are we talking about flashers in the sense of, like, it's Flash Friday and it's some chick showing her cakes? Or are we talking about the guy in the raincoat?
Both, apparently.
Who says, hey, look over here. And then he, like,
well,
shows...
Well, it is New York. It's the full spectrum of humanity.
I suppose. You know what nobody ever points out is, if you are breastfed as a child, presumably you spend the first year of your life staring at a boob from, like, up close.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're like half an inch from a boob.
Yes.
It's several hours a day. Everybody seems to turn out fine. It doesn't seem to have warped anybody. I don't understand what it is about seeing a boob later on that causes irreparable harm to your psyche. I don't understand it. So, well, whatever. It's glad, I'm assuming that this means that they've solved all other problems in crime in New York, by the way, that they're able to move on to people being exposed to buttocks and penises. All right, fantastic.
So, meanwhile, in the middle of all this stuff tonight, the president will be on television around 6:10 or so. To veto the legislation to try to bring an end to the war. But he says, if we leave Iraq, it's going to turn into a cauldron of chaos. So that's that.
All right.
So nothing's going to come of that, obviously.
Cauldron of Chaos either sounds like the next WWE pay-per-view event, by the way, or maybe just, maybe that's what they're gearing. Maybe that's just sort of like what Fox is gearing up to call Iraq once we leave.
Florida teenager is in jail from stealing property from the home of Ted Nugent. Police responded to the rock star's home, and they say it had broken into, had been broken into all night, and several items were taken. During the investigation, police say a boy and another juvenile confessed to the break-in.
Boy, you want to talk about a guy who's got a sack? I mean, who would break into the home of Ted Nugent? Seriously. I mean,
they took two all-terrain vehicles and two hunting crossbows.
If you were going to list the people that you... That's right there with robbing Bernard Getz's house. I mean, it just doesn't seem like... Speaking of New York, Ted Nugent seems like he would be number one on the list of the top five people never, ever, ever to rob. All right. A couple of years ago, I would have said Charlton Heston, but I think he's safe to rob now.
Oh, that is true.
Also,
out of Florida, comes word that State Representative Don Brown thought he was being cute. His fellow Republicans in the Florida House had another word for it. He's a racist.
A racist.
A racist.
Brown is a Republican apologizing for sending an email to his colleagues that noted the April 17th federal income tax deadline. Don't forget to pay your taxes. 12 million illegal aliens are depending on you, he wrote in a message on state-issued email. He said it was meant as a joke, not interpreted that way. The strongest criticism came from Republicans, Hispanics with large immigrant constituencies in South Florida. Yeah, because all those people who escaped from Cuba became Republicans.
Yeah, and it doesn't really seem like he's saying, by the government's own figuring and by the activists' own figuring, there are something like 11 million people who are here illegally, right?
Right.
Somebody's paying for that. So it doesn't really seem, that just seems like more of a fact than anything else. So, all right.
So that is very sad.
Let's do one more here, and then we'll get these calls about the television and so forth.
Are people still hooked on these television theme songs?
I swear to God, do you want to know? Here's an overview of the calls. Trivia about guy who wrote MASH song. This guy says, I want to talk about the theme to Auto Man. And Auto Man, that's like, there's like 2% of the audience that even knows what we're talking about there. This guy apparently has some news on a major protest that is happening somewhere. So we'll get to that here in just a second.
All right. Family is feeling overwhelmed by sex shops in Northeast Portland. May have to go to Oregon Borders for help. They want to change the constitution that allows cities to regulate the placement and number of sex-oriented businesses. Take Donna Lee Miller, for example. She's raising 5 beautiful children a mere 150 feet from a new lingerie modeling shop on Sandy Boulevard. It's called Passionate Dreams.
Really?
Surrounded by mirror-coated doors and windows. My kids are running around in that peep show around the corner. They're trying to get inside. They're banging on the door looking for women.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Did she really say that?
Mm-hmm.
Her kids are banging on the door looking for women.
Her children are naturally curious about what goes on inside the secret shop.
I honestly don't have... How old are her children?
It doesn't say here.
I honestly have no... And by the way, what is her name? Donnelly?
Yeah, and what better place to raise children than Sandy Boulevard?
Well, or make children. I was going to ask if her children all... Did she have all of her children through Immaculate Conception?
It doesn't say.
I wonder how...
What role model she'll find there walking the streets?
I wonder how... Scott, listen to this. Scotty says... This is so great. About this woman in the story. Scotty says, I've seen her. Not so beautiful. That's kind of a Borat sort of a thing. And then one day he break in his cage and he get this. And we all laugh. All right. Are we done?
I guess so. Let's find out what this protest is going on, because I am curious.
All right. We don't want to hear more about this apparently unpleasant-looking woman's children who were pounding at the door of a sex shop.
Then there's a strip club in Sandy called the Pirate's Cove.
Not to be confused with our brand new vegan sponsored Pirate's Tavern.
Right. It's a poor man's knockoff. Well, not even close.
That's the Pirate's Cove.
Oh, that's the Pirate's Cove.
Not the Pirate's Tavern.
Right. The Pirate's Cove is on Sandy. Next to this lingerie shop. Just follow all the running and cheering kids.
Follow the kids who have got a stick and that like barrel hoop thing, and they're chasing us. They're chasing a spotted dog down the street looking for boobs.
Where were the women?
Where are the women?
They're crashing their tricycles into the front door trying to get
demanding access to yes. Rob, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
What's up there, Rick?
How do you do, brother?
Good. I just left the transportation building.
Lucky you.
Tons of Mexicans everywhere.
Okay. Let's clarify what you're talking about here.
Okay, the protest down at ODOT Transportation Building. I guess it's about Mexicans.
So this
not being able to get their driver's license anymore.
So, okay, let's stop here. So you were just in Salem at the ODOT Transportation. Is that like when you said the ODOT Transportation? Is that like a transit center, like an exchange?
No, it's the big ODOT headquarters administration building right there in the heart of downtown.
Right. And there was, by your estimation, a protest with many people of Hispanic descent who were clamoring for driver's licenses.
Perhaps nothing issued fast enough.
Yes.
Exactly.
Nothing is issued fast enough there, let me tell you.
I think that's what the problem is.
Seriously.
Well, I'm Mexican, so I blend in. So.
Yes, okay. So this is, is this part of the whole illegal immigrants demanding that they get driver's licenses?
Yeah, that's exactly. They have signs waving around and flags and all that, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole thing that just doesn't make any sense to me. I really honestly, and it had nothing to do with, I really don't understand how it is that if you are not a legal citizen, you can get a driver's license. That just seems to defy logic. I don't even understand how that works. Like, don't, Yeah, I was talking to Laura about this, and you know, and she's a big bleeding heart, not unlike me, but she's actually kind of beyond me in some ways. But she was talking about illegal immigrants, you know, people just sort of come here from wherever and get driver's licenses. And my thing is, how is that even possible? Because don't you have to have like a birth certificate and stuff?
Papers. You gotta buy some papers.
But I mean,
easy. Go to Vegas.
Oh, I see. So if you are an illegal alien who gets a driver's license,
No. I'm not illegal.
I'm not saying you, but I'm saying yes. I'm not saying you, sir. But I'm saying people. I'm saying. Let's stop and get a handle on this, because I really am curious about this. In Oregon, because they talked about this in California, in Oregon, if you are an illegal citizen, can you get a driver's license?
Well, up until a few months ago, you could. Actually, I was doing, let's just say, security work for ODOT, and they're changing all those because of the demands of the federal government.
But so you could get a driver's license even as an illegal, okay, but not now.
But not now. They just changed it, and I think that's why all the Mexicans, illegal Mexicans, are having such a fit. They're cutting them off.
All right. And the whole thing is just sort of perplexing to me, especially because, I'm not suggesting that our resources ought to be allocated to go and, like, rounding folks up. I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, it seems like there are a lot of other issues we can be dealing with. But it does sort of puzzle me if that the government, on the one hand, is constantly screeching about the number of people who are here illegally, and on the other hand, we're issuing driver's licenses. It seems like one hand ought to have known what the other was doing. You know what I mean? And sort of, I am sort of surprised if the government claims they are so bent on kicking people out of the country who don't legally belong here, why they didn't just use apparently what was a massive database telling you exactly where illegal immigrants lived. I mean, the whole thing was just sort of mystifying to me.
Well, not to me. They don't have a clue. I adopted a kid from Mexico City, and they just made it hell on me to even adopt the kid. I mean, hell is putting it lightly.
And by adopted, do you mean kidnapped? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
No. All legal means.
Only kidding. All right, well, thanks. So there is a big protest happening in Salem, then?
Yeah, it's huge.
All right, thank you, sir.
Have a great, I love the show.
Thank you, my friend. That's Rob. There you go. Let's see. Let's find Frank. Frank.
Hey, what's up, Rick?
Hi, what's up? Hi.
Not much, how's it going? I was just going to talk to you about the Auto Man thing, but, you know, sounds kind of trivial now since you're talking about a protest.
No, we're going to move on to things people really care about. People care about Auto Man. Auto Man, who was, he was a crime-fighting guy on television based on the show, based on the movie Tron.
Right.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about the theme.
I don't remember either. I just thought it might be a cool one. You know, or the A-Team. The A-Team was cool. I'm trying to think of who else had a good theme.
The funny thing about that Incredible Hulk theme, since you're talking about the A-Team, I never really realized how many of these programs is centered around somebody who was convicted of a crime they didn't commit.
Right.
That's the whole thing. It's like everybody in these programs was convicted of or suspected of a crime that they were innocent of.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Auto Man's sidekick named Cursor. Auto Man is a program. I don't even think that's come out on DVD. I think that's a program that, like,
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's like Mantis or something. If you blinked and missed it, you haven't.
Mantis. Oh, my God. That was bad.
You sound really into these programs.
Wasn't Mantis the African American superhero?
He was a black man. Yes, he was.
Yeah, in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
and then he could walk when he put the suit on.
I do believe that was the case. Although, to be honest, I would be lying if I said not Man from Atlantis, Scotty. We're talking about Mantis.
Scotty's a man.
Okay, we're gonna go now, Frank.
All right, we'll see you.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Kara.
Hi, Kara. How are you today?
First, I'm delightful.
You should know, by the way, that Scotty has identified you on the screen as being Linda.
Oh, well, he didn't. Actually, nobody answered the call.
Went into the auto hold mode. Hi, how can I help you today, Kara?
I have to start by saying all hail the fabulous, brilliant, handsome, witty, perfect Scotty J for booking Nellie Olson.
We are excited to have Allison Angram TV's Nellie Olson in the studio with us on Friday. It's gonna be one of the. And okay, let's all, and I'm speaking now to everybody here in the studio. Let's all make a solemn vow that between now and Friday, we find some way to make the Tina Yather celebrity stool autographable, to where Allison Angram's signature will stay on it. We got to figure out some way, because the whole thing is, if somebody signs
it
now,
a silver pen and have them sign the legs.
But they can sign the legs because that's my thing. Is
wouldn't a Sharpie work?
Yeah, but if they sign the seat, future asses will just rub that away. So it's almost like we almost need
to cover with saran wrap.
That's what I'm saying, like a transparent layer of in between years. So we should be thinking about that. All right, yes, yeah, so she'll be in the studio with us Friday.
Maybe you could find a way to put little vials of each of their blood somehow attached to the stool, and they could sign the vials.
That's a great idea.
Sorry.
Uh-huh.
That was wrong in a lot of counts.
Yes.
Tell people to shut up. The TV show was set in Minnesota.
This is Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
Apparently, they started in one state and they wagon trained to another.
Kind of, but they personally lived in Minnesota and Missouri and South Dakota. The family themselves lived everywhere, but the people on the TV show primarily pretty much only lived in Minnesota. Like the first few episodes, they went from one place and got there.
This really does raise the question of whether Allison Anger's even going to want to talk about Little House on the Prairie. I wonder how many questions Ian will be able to get before she just gets that glazed over, goddamn, I'm sick of talking about that show look on her face.
Well, who knows? As far as what Tim said about all the blind school kids dying in the fire that Albert set,
yes.
It was really only Mary's baby and Mrs. Garvey that died in that. But the blind kids had lots of other problems. I'm really curious if she has any idea how Dean Butler might have looked naked or if he was a good kisser.
Let me write this down.
So add that to the list.
Dean Butler.
Yeah.
Okay. Naked or and or... good. And Dean Butler was who again in Little House?
He was Almanzo, the hot blonde.
Okay. Hey, was Little House on the Prairie, the show had Matthew Labyrinth or Labyrinth or
yes,
whatever his name was?
And his brother. There was a lot of siblings on the show.
What was his name? It was some weird French name.
Albert. Oh, Labyrinth is the real name.
Labyrinth, who then went on to star in the War Games knockoff Whiz Kids. All right, Labyrinth, fantastic.
He also died of leukemia on the show or something like that.
Oh, but not in real life.
No.
Okay. I don't want to step in any more, he's dead. Like that thing. Okay, I don't want to make any more comments like that. All right, excellent. Thank you. We will add this to the pile of questions.
Woo!
Thank you, Karen. There you go. That's Karen. Fantastic. Let's get Daryl, and then we'll break, and we'll come back with Dennis Pitzenbarger and our search for the second worst story ever. Daryl, hi there.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
Oh, I just thought I'd tell you, weekend before last, I worked 8 hours and made $400, and I'd tell you how to do it real quick. A friend of mine who I work with, her husband's an engineer, and there's a house that's going to be tearing down and building three more on this property, and they needed some help to start getting stuff cleaned up. And he said, I'll pay you $50 an hour. And so we worked 4 hours on Saturday, 4 hours on Sunday. They bought me breakfast, invited me over for dinner. They gave me a bunch of beer. By the time I left their house Sunday, I shook his hand. He gave me a check for $400. And all I did was throw just a bunch of junk away in a big garbage bin and told him, hey, if you need any help down the road, I'll be glad to help you.
Wait, so how did you hook up with this guy? How did you meet this guy?
I work with his wife.
Okay.
And yeah, he's in there, and I've done some other stuff for him, helped him move and stuff, and they need to, you know, to get started because there's a time limit on how all this stuff could be, and he was trying to get some other people, and I don't know what happened, so then they asked me, I said, $50 an hour, I had to think about it. Well, let's see, I don't have anything planned this weekend, I can make $50 an hour.
And so a guy paid you $50 an hour to throw crap in his house away. Do you suppose that at the end of this, he is regretting offering $50 an hour? Do you suppose he miscalculated?
Oh, no, this guy makes good money. He makes like $300,000 a year. And me and some other friends that helped him and his wife move, and it took a weekend to move. He had a moving company, and we took like the smaller things, computers and stuff like that. And at the end of all that, after all the beer and food that we could eat and drink, at the end of all that, after a couple of days, he gave us $200 a piece for helping him do that. So anytime he needs help, I'm glad to help him.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing, sir.
Okay, take it easy.
There you go. That's Daryl.
I don't understand.
You know, what's the second word in phone screener? Let's see. We'll do one more, and then we'll break. Tracy, hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. I have a question for you to ask the fabulous Nellie Olson.
So this isn't just a call about some furniture that you polished one time?
No, okay. This isn't. No.
Just checking.
Hey, there was on the episode that was actually on this morning because I was homesick with my son, Linwood Boomer, who wrote Malcolm in the Middle, plays a character on Little House called Adam. And I want to know, was he, like, the freaking genius then that he is now, or did Little House warp him so that he could make that fabulous TV show, or does she even remember him?
Linwood Boomer from Malcolm.
the creator of Malcolm in the Middle.
Was on Little House.
Was on Little House in the Prairie, yes.
You know, I have to admit that when we said we wanted to book Alison Angrum TV's Nellie Olson on Friday's program, it was really just sort of as a goof. And then once Scotty informed us that it was booked, I was really thinking we were never going to come up with any questions. I really have to say that I am sort of pleasantly surprised and a little startled by the number of people who actually have real questions about Little House on the Prairie. But I wonder, part of me, though, I mean,
the thing is, we all secretly wanted to be, you know, Nellie Olson. She was the bad girl that, you know, we couldn't be back then. And so a lot of us worshipped her secretly.
No, it's true. And apparently that goes across gender lines, because she apparently has a very strong following in the gay male community as well. So
excellent. I think it was those curls, maybe. I don't know.
And the fact that she was just so, she was
perfect. Her hair bow was perfect. Her dress was perfect.
Well,
everything was perfect.
And yeah. I was going to say that she just had such a sharp tongue. She was just, absolutely. She just didn't take any crap from anybody, and she was just so bitchy, and would just put you right
Laura,
back in.
Laura was so good. It was the total yin and yang thing.
I'm with you.
It was the opposite. So.
All right. Thank you, Tracy.
Bring with Boomer. Absolutely.
God bless. We'll ask her.
Okay.
Thank you. That's Tracy. Are you surprised by the number of questions we're getting preemptively about the Little House on the Prairie?
No, because everybody loves Little House on the Prairie.
I guess. I wonder, you know what I do have, though? I have these nightmares where we're going to be like three questions into this, and it's going to be like that William Shatner thing on Saturday Night Live where they're asking him the questions, and he's just, you know, he doesn't know the answers to anything because he doesn't care about the show, and it's just going to get alive.
If she's coming for a comedy show, then she's probably going to want to yuck it up a little bit.
Yeah. I wonder if she's really funny. I wonder if anybody has seen Alison Angrum do her comedy, Angrum. I'm going to have to put that on a cue card somewhere because I don't want to...
You're just going to call her Nellie and that will be embarrassing.
I'm going to make this vow right now that I will not slip and call her Nellie. I am not going to do it. I won't. I don't care. I just don't want to mispronounce her real name. That's my thing. I don't want to be like Matt Groening, you know, I don't want to be that guy. I want to make sure that I can, you know, because she probably has. She's an idiot chuckling moron DJs who call her Nellie Olson. So, Nellie, you know. This is,
no, they say, whoa
Nellie. Yeah. Scotty's asking, if I call her Nellie, I'm quoting now, can I kick you in the gonads? Who says that? What are you, a farmer? All right. What is the thing that Paul Harvey said in that sound clip we used to have? Gonads are nice, but they're no substitute for brains. Good day. All right, back after this. The Rick Emerson radio program. Dennis Pitzenbarger around the corner. Our search for the second worst news story in the history of the world. What else? Oh, Courtney Love continues to be an attention whore. You stay back. Stay there. We'll back after this. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Later on in the week, we have the Oregonian TV critic Peter Garland who will be joining us. Also, Scott Daly, Mr. Skin, Alice Cooper, and TV's Nellie Olson. That's all coming in the next few days here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Rick, this is the final thing we're going to say about this. Rick, the song Suicide is Painless from MASH was penned by Robert Altman's 14-year-old son. Really? I've heard his son made more money for the song than the dad did with the movie. There you go. All right, 503-733-2970. Many, many, many questions coming in about the Incredible Hulk, none of which I will be answering now. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Dennis Pitzenbarger. What is the show called now?
Miles Around.
It is no longer the Fuel Show.
It is no longer the Fuel Show.
There's been a revamping, as they say.
Reimagining?
A reimagining.
Like
Tim Burton did with Planet of the Apes.
Except for the first one was still better.
Yes. Yeah. So it is now Miles Around 9 to 11.
9 to 11 right Saturdays. Here on AM 970, Solid State Radio.
Let's see, we've got this. Rick, about Alison Arngrim. TV's Nellie Olson. Apparently, she originally auditioned for the role of Laura Ingalls, but was not successful. She then tried out for the role of Laura's sister Mary to the same avail. However, when auditioning for the role of Nellie Olson, she was hired on the spot for being mean so convincingly. P.S. I am a glorious bastard. God bless you. That's from Ryan. Fantastic.
She was kind of a pit face. She kind of had that, you know, kind of angry
I'm
little
so glad
girl.
That, okay.
You're not allowed anywhere near the studio.
Seriously, you can't come here anyway. On Friday, you got to stay out of the building.
Why?
Oh. Because I know what you're saying. Hey, you were kind of a pig face to Alison Arngrim, which is, by the way, not an assessment that we on the Rick Emerson Show share.
I'm just saying that she...
Yes?
If I would have been a director casting for that role, I think that just by looks alone, she didn't have that wholesome little girl look. She had that, I can be a bitchy little girl look about her. I think that's why she was so good at the role. Hey, I watched a lot of Little House on the Prairie. You know, I mean, I was just kind of shoved down my throat as a kid. I liked the show. I think it has good, it showed good values, but you could tell that she was very at home in that role.
So you didn't have to act a whole lot there. All right. Well, that's Friday. Then we got that and Alice Cooper on the same day.
Now, that I'm interested in. I've had little discussions with you. You know, I don't know if you're open to saying what you said to me in private, that you're going to have to commit Harry Carey if it goes bad.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, I mean... You know, how bad could it be? I mean, it's Alice Cooper, and he's a great interview. Like, even if I suck, he's funny. That's the thing is, he's such a pro. I've seen him interviewed. And he is such a pro, and he's got the anecdotes down. He knows how to be funny. He knows how to do setups and punchlines. Even if I just completely blow my half of it, he'll still be good. But I don't want to blow my half of it because, you know, it's like, how many times do you have a chance to interview, Alice Cooper? And I'm not going to say the stupid, I'm not worthy thing.
No.
Because that's the whole thing. Like, Sarah and I were talking about...
don't say that. You weren't considering saying that, were you?
Why would I ever say that?
I know that you wouldn't. I just
that's what I'm saying.
Said that.
No, because that's what I'm, because as we get closer to Friday, you know that that's what it, and you know, again,
it's I know, like, all those horrible DJs, I can just picture it.
So much of my life is just about not wanting to be like every bad DJ that I've ever heard in my life, and you know, I mean, I know, personally, and I will not give his name, but there's a DJ that I used to work with who interviewed Alice Cooper, who did, I mean, and I swear to God, it was like 3 years after the movie had come and gone. And he starts over, we're not worthy. And it just makes, even now, it makes my skin crawl to think about it. It's just, you don't want to be some hack.
I would think that if anything, you'd get the line in about, yes, in the Portland area, we do have a Milwaukee.
No, see, I'm not going to say that either.
No.
See, okay. That's why I'm doing the interview and you're not coming to the building on Friday. That's why you're staying out in your car. That's why you're sleeping somewhere else.
So I should just basically take Friday off.
Going and sleeping in the back of your car in a lot somewhere on Friday. No, that's why.
I would never say that. I would be honored to meet the guy, let alone interview him. But I would never, it's just like, hey, I do the same thing when I interview someone like Mario Andretti or Parnelli Jones. I don't say,
you're a great driver.
Yeah, what's it like to be such a great driver? What was it like when you won the Indianapolis 500? Like 4,000 other retards
totally.
That do what I do haven't asked him that.
And of course, you know, the best example of that, of always that Chris Farley character on SNL, where he's, do you remember when you were in the Beatles?
Yeah.
It was awesome. You know, and I live in fear of being that guy.
You were in another band before that. Wasn't it, Wings?
And it was Sarah and I, Chuck Palahniuk, author of Fight Club, Choke, Haunted, many other novels, and his new book, Rant, he's going to be in the building later. He's talking to Corden Fatboy.
Wow.
And so Sarah and I, we're dorks. We'll hang around and meet him. But Sarah is...
Well, first we have to clear it with Corden Fatboy. I'm going to ask him during the break. You think they'll be okay that we accost
like,
I guess?
Like they're his handlers. I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't, you know. But
I'm kind of a nerve.
That's what I'm
really
saying.
Freaked out.
Your whole thing is like, what do I say to Chuck Palahniuk? And I'm like, well, you know, just don't. I mean, I know you're not an idiot. But, you're not going to say, I'm your biggest fan. You know, like you just.
I think people that are in that position, and again, it's just my little world of cars. I think people appreciate if you say you're a fan as long as you don't gush over it. It's like, hey, I'm a fan. I think you're, I think you're talented, and move on with it. You don't have to gush to get it across that you're a big fan.
And see, when in doubt, you can always rehearse it. And I'm unashamed to admit that I rehearsed my Aaron Sorkin thing. When I met Aaron Sorkin in San Diego, by the way, I guess now that it's said and done, I don't know if I ever gave proper thanks on the air, now that it's all said and done, because I didn't want to talk about it in advance and jinx it, but our good friend Kara, who called in earlier today about Little House on the Prairie, she's actually the one who set that whole thing up, because she had a good friend of hers, one of her best friends, is in the Farnsworth invention, which is the play, Sorkin's new play. Her friend Ryan actually is in that play. Right. And it was through Kara, you know, hooked me up with Ryan, who in turn, you know, got me the tickets on rehearsal night where I got to meet Aaron Sorkin.
The power of the audience.
Totally. I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, it was just totally happenstance, you know. It was like, you know, me to her to him to Sorkin. I mean, it was totally just worked out very, very well. But I didn't mention it before. I want to jinx it. But I totally rehearsed my greeting to Aaron Sorkin. Like, I rehearsed it. I rehearsed it so much that I don't even really remember saying it. It just came out. You know, it's like when you go on stage and if you sort of got stage fright or you're just sort of overwhelmed, that's the reason why you drill your lines so much as an actor. Because a lot of times you go on stage and you blank. You don't even remember. And it's like muscle memory. You want to have it so rehearsed that it just comes out without even having to think about it. And that was like the two sentences I said to Aaron Sorkin.
So it obviously came out flawless, though.
It did. I actually will say it. I delivered it flawlessly. But that's not because I had presence of mind. I didn't. I was so... When I met Aaron Sorkin, in the back of my head, there was that white, hot, blinding light and a screaming voice going, "You are talking to Aaron Sorkin!"
I remember getting a text message from you like a few minutes after you did it.
This makes me sound like the president of the North American Fanboy Love Association. But I was totally calm when I met Aaron Sorkin, because I was just, note how I'm working that phrase in a thousand times Clyde style. When I met Aaron Sorkin, but I was totally calm during the incident, but then afterward, I swear to God, I vibrated like I was on top of San Andreas. You know what I mean? I was like jittery, and I was sort of like breathing really fast afterwards, because it's like I realized, like, hey, I just totally pulled it off without screwing it up. And I text messaged like everybody I knew. So the thing with Polinick, I think, is just not to say you're his number one fan, and don't say how much you love Fight Club. I think those are the two things you want to stay away from.
I'm just going to say it's really nice to meet you. I'm a big fan of yours.
See, and if you say it like that, it comes off genuine. It's when you gush or you become the we're not worthy
person. Well,
it becomes ridiculous.
I like his writing. His work hasn't changed my life. You know, like it's not, I really enjoy the way that he writes.
Yeah.
And it's different to like introduce yourself and meet someone like in person, like in the studio. That would be a really cool thing to do. But when you say interview, like if you get a big guest, like say like taking the Alice Cooper thing.
Right.
I have always found that if I could find some sort of weird thing to ask a celebrity, auto celebrity would be like a Mario Andretti. A lot of people associate with that. I asked him about a winery that he has as a side business. The guy felt like, I felt as if I had asked him a question, again, that a million other people hadn't asked him.
And I think sometimes I've interviewed enough people that when you can tell when you ask them something that they've been asked a lot, because their answer...
A big sigh?
It's not even a little... It's not even that so much, although I've gotten that, too. But I've asked people things before, and it's like you can see in their head, like, them pushing play on the tape. And the answer just sort of spool, and they give it the same way that you've seen him give it in other interviews, where they've got it down to a sound bite, which I understand, because you do 1,000 interviews, and how many times can you answer?
Yeah, Lucas, what was the, about Star Wars?
How many times can you talk about what's in Marcellus's briefcase? You know what I mean? There's only so many times you can do that. So my goal in every interview I do is to at least once or twice ask a question where they go, well, and then they don't, and then they have to think about it because they've never been asked that before.
Yeah. And so. you give me a hard time about being a, as you put it, sales weasel. But it's the same thing when you ask people that are celebrities. You want to ask them something that opens them up. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but I mean, I would think that if I was, you know, to go to interview Alice Cooper, I'd be, you know, you'd want to automatically ask them about the music and the history and how people, you know. But I think a lot of people just don't realize. Maybe not in general, but people don't realize what an intelligent guy he really is and how ahead of his time he was and how many different things he's involved in, like golf or like, you know, a lot of charities and stuff. So to me, that would be the thing. I'd love to go out and play 18 holes with that guy.
And let me just tell you this, this is the final thing I'll say. Then we got a few calls to take here, and then we got a break, and then we'll talk more to Dennis. We have Tim coming up, and we will do this hunt for the second worst story ever today. But so I'm in bed last night, and Lara's reading whatever she's reading. She's reading something that's like intellectual. She's reading like some Joseph Campbell book or something. And I'm there with my Alice Cooper book where he's on the front like all made up like Baby Jane holding a bloody golf club. Totally. And I'm reading it, and I swear to God, it's just full of great photos. It's got him with Salvador Dali, him with Vincent Price. He's telling all these cool stories about when Bob Ezrin first heard the demo for 18. And I'm reading it, and I swear to God, I'm not going to do it on Friday. But I'm sitting there in bed. I'm a grown man. I'm 34 years of age, pasty, pudgy, balding, sitting there in bed reading.
out loud, I kept going, like, this is so cool. Like, awesome. God damn, this is cool. At, like, every three or four pages, as of nothing. And then I think, like, the third or fourth time I said it, she actually, without even looking, she goes, are you going to keep saying that? Like, as I read the book. And
she panders to you. My wife does the same thing. I'll show her something that's on a car that's like, you know, say it's a chrome header for something. Or she'll go, oh, it's shiny. Yeah, it's like, yeah, whatever.
And you know what I did last night? I walked in the door, and you know what I did as soon as I walked, I did before I said hello, before I kissed her, before I scratched the dog behind the ears, before I did anything, I walked in the front door, and I walked immediately, just directly from the front door to my vinyl collection. And just started rooting through and pulling out my Alice Cooper records and just stacked them up on the turntable and just hit, you know, just dropped the needle and turned it up about a third of the way up, which is pretty loud on my stereo at home. And like, and she's standing there kind of waiting for me to go like, hi, honey, how was your day? But it's like, I walk in the door and I'm immediately ensconced in my Alice Cooper vinyl collection. God, I'm lame. Calls and then we'll...
Awesome.
I'm awesome. Do I remember when I interviewed Alice Cooper? That was awesome. Our good friend Below on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
What's going on, man?
How are you doing, brother? What's up?
Oh, not too much. And I hate to be a blast from the past, because I know you guys move on, but I'm about a day behind here.
Oh, that's right. You're on the podcasting.
Yes, sir. Which works well for me, though, I might add.
Yes.
I just wanted to let you know that I will pay you cash in hand if you do an entire show in Renfair speak. Dude, that has to be the funniest half hour I've ever heard in my life. And it's not just Renfair speak, it's Rick Emerson doing Renfair speak.
That was, shall cross my palm with doubloons of silver, or, you know, whatever the hell. God, see, it just makes me cringe even to do a little bit of it there. God,
I know,
God.
It's lame. I've always wanted to go just out of curiosity, but I can't find any people of color who've ever been to one.
No, of course not. No, it is the whitest activity. I can't think, and I got to be careful because it'll turn into a whole huge bit that'll take over the rest of the day. But the Ren Faire, that may be, I mean, whiter than any monster truck rally, whiter than any Star Trek convention.
Are you kidding me? My girlfriend works monster truck rallies. They're whiter than that?
No, I mean, I haven't been to a monster truck rally in a few years, but I mean, Ren Faires are really one of the whitest things. It's like concentrated OxyClean whiteness.
Where else are you going to see people basically square dancing to an out of tune ukulele?
I mean, really, that's exactly what it is. Totally.
So I almost have to go out of curiosity just so I can take pictures.
You should totally go in just, you know, just your normal everyday street clothes. Don't try to dress upscale. Don't try to dress up. Don't put on a corset and spats. Don't try to dress like a period piece. Totally just whatever you would roll out of bed in and just walk there, because I got to tell you, there's just going to be some cognitive dissonance. And then go in and just, and you know, and refuse to speak, you know, the way they do, refuse to talk their weird Ren Faire language, because that's what screws with them. When you're like, yeah, I just need to, buy one of those funnel cakes over there, you know, and I know not funnel cakes. We have here, though, flatbread from thou oven, and you're like, come on, will you just give me, I just want a muffin, will you please?
I'm going to go, actually, now that you said it, I have to find one. I'm going to find one around here.
Totally.
I don't know if there's any down in Vegas, but I'm sure there's enough craziness down here where I'll find something close.
And just wear like a big Pistons jersey or something when you do it, too, just to complete the sort of culture, you know, just so the historical inaccuracies, you know.
I'm going to do it, and there will be video.
Well, isn't it like hallucinogenics and the Excalibur?
What?
They have, the Excalibur's close, but I don't know if it comes as close to what I've been hearing out of you guys.
The Excalibur isn't nearly that, because, I mean, they're getting paid like $8 an hour to be there. They don't care that much.
No. I went to the dinner thing at the Excalibur once just to go, and, you know, somebody threw like a leg of a bird on a metal plate with no silverware.
Oh, you're talking about the dinner jousting thing that
I actually have been to that. That's actually hilarious, because it's probably the only restaurant in the world where you could just drag a chicken leg through your mouth and scream at the same time at a horse.
He's right. You can scream at the waitress.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You can scream at the waitress like, yo, you know, serving wench, bring me more gruel.
Are you thinking about medieval times?
I demand a flagon of mead, thou wench.
It's the funniest thing ever. You got to come down here and do it.
The Excalibur Casino in Vegas, they do these because it's medieval themed. Yeah, and they will do these events where it's like you can eat in like, you know, a period themed restaurant where literally it's just a huge thing
thing of meat and like a big pewter mug full of mead while you're watching jousting happening in front of you. It's insane. I've never been, but I've seen the video. It's just completely ridiculous.
Dude, I tell you what, the next time you come down here, you have to do it. Hell, I'll pay. You have to do it.
This is my final Excalibur story is this. The last time I was at the Excalibur, because I don't think I've gone there the last few times I've been back in Vegas. The last time I was at the Excalibur, I was wandering through, and I saw, you know, some of the whatever the serving wenches, and they put them in these big low cut thing where their cakes are just hanging out, and you know, my friends and I walk through. This is by the way the same trip to Vegas where we saw Pete Rose in a sports book, but we're there and we see the serving wenches and they look all slutty, and then later on, I swear to God, because he was in town for a convention, I saw Ron Jeremy leaving with two of them. I saw Ron Jeremy walking out with a serving wench on each arm, and it almost made me cry. It almost like brought tears to my eyes.
So, oh, that is awesome. Well, I won't take up any more of your time. I was just sitting here indulging myself.
All right. I don't even know how to end this. Thank you, my friend.
All right, I'll catch you guys.
There you go. All right. Let's see. There's the low. We get back, we'll talk to Scott Daly, who's going to pimp some nerdality. Nerdality. Foster has an Alice Cooper observation, and so forth. We're here with Dennis Spitzenbarger, Tim Riley around the corner, and our hunt for the second worst song ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Spinal Tap. Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. We'll talk to Scott Daly here in a moment. We're also here with Dennis Pitzenbarger. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and your editor.
Now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
And Tim is going to run on Sundays from now on. It starts on May 20th. It's going to run for 4 hours, from 1 to 4. Service will return to running 6 days a week on September 16th. And that guy with the F of the tram sign, he took it down.
Why?
He said he made his point and wanted to get on with his life.
That's too bad.
So we'll see about that. Meanwhile, crowds calling for immigration reform gathered on the steps of the Capitol this afternoon. Many chanted, Si su puente, which means, yes, we can. Many carried American flags. We understand a whole bunch of people went down to the DMV or something like that in Salem. Last year, 10,000 people took part in the Portland protest, and that gets underway at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So we'll see what happens. They may stand on the railroad tracks and block light rail, so try to get home early if you can. Well, left-handed women are not going to live very long. A new study suggests women who are left-handed have a higher risk of dying. This is due to an artery in the brain that supplies blood. Therefore, no artery, no blood, you die. Left-handers are reported to be underrepresented in the older age groups. This is a study of 10,000 Dutch women, many of which were left-handed. And they died 13 years earlier than right-handed women. So be prepared for that if you're a left-handed woman.
Be prepared for the sweet, icy embrace of death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's enough.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, who shall return at 4 o'clock today. Hey, don't forget, should things break out, we'll be covering it live.
4, 5, 6, and 7 o'clock, and live updates as events warrant throughout.
If they do.
Possibly tumultuous day.
I hope they don't. It'll make me angry if that happens.
You wouldn't like him when he's angry.
Interrupting my dinner.
Fantastic. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Excellent. Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Hello, sir.
I just want to say this. There were no utensils in the medieval times.
Sarah was saying that they wouldn't give her a fork.
Hence, there are no utensils at medieval times. Would you like a refill on that Pepsi? There are no utensils, but there was Pepsi.
Oh, really? Is that true? Because you have to drink it out of a big wooden cup?
I'm quoting the cable guy, kids. Come on.
Really? Why?
What are you talking about?
I remember when Janine Garofalo is the wench, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah. And Matthew Broderick says, there's no utensils, but you serve Pepsi? And her response is, dude, I got a lot of tables.
All right.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Sarah, for helping me out.
No problem.
Thank you. Yeah, hey, I just wanted to call and remind everyone that tonight at the Powell's Books in Beaverton at Studio Hills Crossing is that big Star Wars 30th anniversary celebration. As everyone knows, 30 years ago in May, Star Wars was released to the masses, and a whole new breed of geeks were born.
Yes.
So, Film Fever Radio will be there talking to folks, and authors Steve Perry, who wrote Shadows of the Empire, and Timothy Zahn, heir to the Empire, will be there, as well as a costume contest. Star Wars character, stormtroopers, the whole shebang.
And you and Aaron Geek in the City Duran will be there.
We'll be there with our mobile Film Fever Radio Studios. That's right. Recording this week's show.
Fantastic.
So good times.
Are you still on the wagon, Scott Daly?
I'm still on the wagon.
Scott Daly sent me an email after that whole business of him puking four times at the listener party with a whole lot of like, I am done drinking for a good long while. Have you followed through on that pledge?
I had a beer this weekend.
All right. So that's like Scotty and quitting of smoking.
Yeah, well, it was Jason of Venice Twins Photography's birthday, so I had a beer.
Yeah, sure. Blame him. All right.
He'll take responsibility. I know Jason.
All right, so that is tonight, Star Wars.
Tonight, Star Wars at Powell's Books at Cedar Hills Crossing in Beaverton at 7 p.m.
Cool.
It's going to be a good time, so hope everyone comes out. And Sarah, we expect to see you there.
All right. Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, no.
I had no response.
Yeah, sir, I have no response to that. All right, thank you, Scott.
Thanks, guys. See you Friday.
Finally, all right, we're here with Dennis Pitzenbarger.
Today's also the 20-year anniversary of Dirty Dancing, speaking of our Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner.
Stop. Okay.
Yeah, I did catch that. My wife actually caught that, and, she corrected.
Here's the thing. Can I just tell you something? And this makes me a bad Gen Xer. I've only seen that movie once.
And you've only seen it once?
I've seen. My wife is not she's not a Dirty Dancing fan. Oh. My mom loves Dirty Dancing. My wife, not so much. I have seen Roadhouse 100 times, though, so, you know. All right. So, Sarah, because we got a break again, we got about 13 minutes minus whatever for the break. So, do you think I should read the two suggestions for Worst Story on this side and then do the voting on the other side?
I'd say let's do that, Rick Emerson.
Okay. Hey, Dennis, are you ready to to be part of this our search for the second worst story in the history of the world?
Since we're in all in character, you betcha, Z.
Sorry. I was just playing along. All right.
Has anything actually unseated the misappropriated stitching on the female part?
Do you mean the outgoing male in the incoming slot?
That is a very creative way to say it. But
no,
that
that's
one,
the worst. That's why we're now searching for the second worst story.
Oh,
in
I was
going to
say, because that one cannot be trumped.
No, that's the jersey is hanging in the. That's in the rafters.
Yeah.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is now that time as we search for the second worst story in the history of the world. I got the reigning champion here. I will read the reigning champion, followed by the challenger. Then we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do an Insta poll to find out which story you find the most horrifying. The loser, of course, is relegated to the trash heap of Rick Emerson history, and the winner goes on to face another horrifying story in the future. Here is story number one and reigning champion. A 31-year-old mother from Trondheim, Norway, was shocked after she saw her own stomach tearing apart following cesarean surgery. Tony Johansson said she was, quote, horrified, end quote, at the sight of her stomach contents, including intestines, falling out and onto the floor after the stitches ripped. Authorities at St. Olav's Hospital, a place you should avoid at all costs, blame new thread for the stitching that's been replaced despite complaints from some doctors. The Afton Post and quotes Johansson as saying, quote, when I got up, I felt my entire stomach tear. I got help from the hospital staff and was put into a bed. Then I saw that my intestines and the contents of my abdomen had fallen out. End quote. The new threat apparently had been instituted to save money.
I'm just wondering what.
Number one.
In what way or what activity? I mean, did she just get up and this happened? I mean, was she doing jumping jacks?
I think she had just gotten up. When I got up, I felt my entire stomach tear. I saw that my intestines and the contents of my abdomen had fallen out. That's story number one. It's 503-733-2970, by the way. 503-733-2970. What does that look for?
I hate that story.
Well, I'm sorry, Sarah. The people...
Not better than...
The people keep speaking. Here's story number two. This is from theadvertiser.au. This is an Australian newspaper.
Not the Austin Popton?
No. A worker was recently injured when his penis became caught in machinery.
Oh, Lord.
At a northern suburbs sawmill. The man, age 30, was working at the Parafield Garden sawmill at 150 when his Crotch and penis became caught in the chain of a piece of sawmill machinery. He was taken to the Royal Adelaide Hospital. It is believed his injuries are not life-threatening, but he initially suffered uncontrollable bleeding. A company spokesperson said, quote, he got caught in the log-moving mechanism and then was pulled onto one of the saws. End
his
quote.
Crotch got ripped off.
I'm quoting now. He was working at the Parafield Garden sawmill when his crotch and penis became caught in the chain of a piece of machinery. He did suffer uncontrollable bleeding.
That's like
story number
whole,
two.
The whole shebang.
I wasn't there.
How do you? I'm not trying to go to the movie quote, but how do you get the twig above the berries thing from What About Mary? But how do you get your crotch that close to a moving chain without having awareness of how close your crotch is to
I
a
would
moving
sort
chain?
Of at all moments, I think I would have sort of a relative awareness of where my body parts were. Yes, I'm with you on that. I don't really know the answer to that. There you go, kids. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll take your votes. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970 as we search for the second worst story in the history of the world. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Back up. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello.
That was totally my fault. I was trying to be crafty because I wanted to play.
Oh, thank you.
I cannot believe you haven't watched this video, or this movie.
I have, just only once. I've only seen it once, because I don't have a vagina. So, it is a chick movie. It's very much a chick film. Unless you are dating a girl, and let's be honest, I'm 34, any girl I would conceivably, I mean, look, any guy my age, any girl you would conceivably be dating, like, they would already have seen this 100 times. Like, that groundwork has already been done for me, you know what I mean? So, no. It's like having to see, like, I don't have to see beaches anymore. Because it's like, even I think by the time I met Lars, she'd already seen it like 50 times. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. It's time to vote on our hunt for the second worst story of all time. Just to briefly recap. Story number one, when I got up, I felt my stomach tear. I got up from the hospital bed and was put back into bed. Then I saw that my intestines and the contents of my abdomen had fallen out and onto the floor. Whoops. Second story, a worker was injured when his penis became caught in machinery at a northern suburb sawmill. The man was working at 1:50 p.m. when his crotch and penis became caught in the chain of a piece of sawmill machinery. He suffered uncontrollable bleeding. All right, story number one or story number two, you make the call. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. We'll just take these in no particular order. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find more horrifying?
Oh, man, number two.
All right, thank you.
And how do you put a tourniquet on that?
I don't know the answer to that. Well done. Thank you. All right. That's a good question. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story is the worst?
It happened because he was crouching down to look at the chain. So it's definitely the pain of the chain.
So you're voting for number two?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Hi. It's 503-733-2970. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Number two. I mean, you can stuff number one back in, but number two is gone.
That is true. That is true. Number one, you can sort of scoop that back inside. Number two, it's there's nothing there. The clay with which you sculpt is that's gone. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find to be the worst?
Well, Rick, I think that number two story is by far the worst. I've actually been at some of these mills before, and there's all kinds of dangerous stuff there. So he was probably just distracted by the 48-inch wide circular saw sitting 2 feet from his head.
All right, thank you. All right, hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story do you find the worst?
Hi, I think it's the second story, only because the first story seems like an opening of a Ziploc bag, and the second seems like ripping and pulling.
Thank you. Yellow and green make blue. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story is the worst?
It's got to be the second one, Rick. Right. First, we got to get rid of that first story anyway, because it's getting old.
All right.
So, yeah, definitely the second one.
All right, thank you. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story is the worst?
Crotch and penis, ow.
Okay. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Which story is the worst?
First one. I really like the penis.
Oh, okay. Almost a shutout, but not quite. Ladies and gentlemen, his crotch and penis became caught in a piece of equipment at the buzzsaw. There you go. That's at the sawmill. That's the worst story. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down and try to help the retarded. See you tomorrow, kids. Bye now. I have nothing.